Welcome to Hype, Hypeable.com's podcast, all about the latest entertainment news stories. My name is Selena. This is my voice this week. We're back to talk about The 100, Season 3, our third special about the CW show The 100. A little bit of an explanation. So we've been trying to do this show for a long time, and this is officially hashtag the cursed episode, not the child, but the episode, because every time we try to do it, something goes wrong. This time, both me and Merima are feeling under the weather, but we thought, what the hell, we're going to get it done, right, guys? So let's push through it and and see how we go. How are you guys? I have Merima and Pamir with me.
We're good. Well,
also a little croaky, kind of. So we'll see how we go. But Pam is at full voice.
I'm a full voice, not at full body. So between all of them, I feel like we make a whole person. So we're like one human.
It's really hard, guys.
But we're here. We're doing it. This is very exciting. And you know what? It's cool because my voice is a little bit croaky. You might have noticed, but it's okay because this is mainly really, you know, for Pam and Merima are watching The 100 for the first time. You guys, if you're The 100 fans, you probably know Unhypeable. I write about it all the time, so you already know everything I think. So this is pretty much just to get Merima and Pam talking, which is going to be fun. Does someone want to do the contact info for me?
Sure. If you want to reach out about anything we talk about for The 100 Season 3 and perhaps wink, wink, nudge, nudge any future seasons of The 100, you can contact us in a myriad of ways. For starters, you can always reach us with rather shorter comments via Twitter. Our Twitter handle is HypeableHype. We are also at HypeableHype on Instagram in case you want to follow along in any of the pop culture adventures the hosts are having in between shows. If you have lengthy comments, you can contact us with those in two different ways. You can leave them in the show notes on the latest episode on hypeable.com, or you can shoot us an email. And if you want to do that, our email address is hype@hypeable.com. So plenty of ways to get in contact.
Fantastic. And we have a lot of feedback to get through later in the show, actually, because you guys have so much to say about The 100 Season 3. Of course you do.
How surprising.
Which is going to be great. Yeah, I know. We have a lot to say about it too. But before we get into the discussion, and I know we have a lot to get through, but I just really briefly wanted to mention, because a couple of days ago, The 100 was actually renewed for season 5.
Is that how you lost your voice? Yelling about it?
I was screaming about it. I was so excited.
I mean, like, no big deal or anything, right?
I mean, guys, we already talked about this on the main show. We don't need to focus on it. I just wanted to bring it up in case someone somehow didn't know. We just found out. We're super stoked. This means that we can enjoy season 4 without having to worry about the end being not satisfactory. So really cool, really great. You can read more about it on Hypeable. Let's get into talking about season 3. And of course, season 3 is the one where Allie sort of took over everyone and turned everyone into zombies. It's the season where we lost some big characters. It's a pretty controversial season. Lots to talk about. Pam and Merima, first impressions, go.
Can I say, did I mention this on the last show that, like, I think we talked about Pam gave me a huge spoiler when we first started recording these shows, and it was that Lincoln died. And so for our first episode, Pam was like, yeah, well, like, he's not around or whatever. And I was like, wait, what happened? Because I just had totally missed that because, you know, Pam does other writing for other outlets and obviously is slightly more attuned to what was going on than me. So I spent this entire season being like, well, it's obviously in this season. So just waiting, waiting, waiting.
Do you know so what's funny stressful. About that, though? What's funny about that is that it wasn't even in my other outlets that it came up. It was literally just spending time with Selena. Yeah, because specifically at Comic-Con, Selena and I, we stayed in a room together.
Oh, yeah.
And she was just like, oh, yeah, American Gods going to be great. Ricky Whittle is on it. And, you know, it makes sense because, you know, they killed him off on The 100. So he's got to do something.
We also met him.
I did not go to that party.
I met him in person, so obviously I was talking about him.
Yeah, and like I knew he was on American Gods, but I just didn't put it together in my brain with the like timing of that. Anyway,
But I mean, if it helps, I'm pretty sure that most people watching at the time knew, like both him and Lexa, we sort of had an indication So you were as spoiled as the rest of us, I think.
That was funny. I just like wanted to finally tell the rest of that story that we haven't said in case anyone didn't know somehow. As for this season, there were aspects of it I really liked. I felt like, I think you wrote in here, Selena, it kind of felt like there was too many seasons combined in one. And I sort of agree with that about season three. It felt like the Pike storyline and the Allie storyline probably should have been separated out into different seasons. But then again, I don't know if I could have watched a whole season of Pike. So I didn't like this as much as season two. There were aspects of it I really, really liked. I really liked all of the Allie stuff. I thought that was all fascinating, how that tied in with Lexa and all of that. I really hated all the Pike stuff. I really hated the Bellamy stuff, which I'm sure we'll get to. So I felt like in season two, I felt like it was a stronger season overall, and it was kind of doing something a bit different. And this season I found very frustrating at times, I think, because I was meant to because of like what the characters are doing, and that's totally justified. But at times I felt like that wasn't what I was meant to be feeling. So I'm a little more conflicted over it.
Yes, you and literally the entire fandom.
Yeah,
I think for like generally speaking, season two is considered the best and season three has been criticized widely. And I'm not sure I agree with all of it, but I do agree with some of it that they just packed too much too fast. And things like the Bellamy and Pike stuff, I mean, you're totally right. They should have focused more on it. They should have... Bellamy's actions make sense when you think about them, not when you first see... Anyway, we'll get to that. But basically, yes. Yeah. Good points. What about you, Pam?
Yeah, I think, like, Verma, honestly, it was so funny because after finishing season one, I was so ready to jump into season two, and I watched season two so fast, and season three was a little hard to get into in the beginning, and it really started picking up speed later. But I think a lot of that did have to do with the fact that there were so many different, the story was going in so many different trajectories. And then like after I finished the season, I wasn't watching like in real time. I don't know if they knew they were going to get picked up for season four right away or like before they started planning or what, but it almost kind of felt like they wanted to pack all of this in because they weren't sure, at least to like an uneducated watcher that's just coming into
this during the first time
because at the end, it's like, it doesn't set up a new conflict. It doesn't really end on a cliffhanger. Like, you know, these people still have problems to work through. There are obviously still some things that are left to be wrapped up, but just because they packed so much in and it didn't end on a, I need to watch more. To me, it kind of felt like they weren't sure if they were going to come back. So they just decided to put all this in there and leave the characters in a decent place just in case.
You mean with the world ending?
Yeah. Well, kind of like I guess we can say this now, like with a Rogue One situation, since it's been out for a couple of months, you know?
Right. Yeah. For sure. That's for sure how the show's going to end, by the way. Like, I'm convinced. But I mean, yeah. And it kind of brings me to, because I guess I'll just say this briefly as I possibly can, to sort of answer that, what you said about there being a lot of story. What I think it is, and this is sort of my half-informed opinion about what was going on behind the scenes, is that when they got to season three, like the showrunner, Jason Rothenberg, he has always wanted to do a hard sci-fi show. You know, when the show began in season one, you had more of those like teen show elements, and they're definitely still present, but what he wanted to do is basically like another Battlestar Galactica. You know, he wanted to get into this AI stuff, this futuristic, like all that kind of Nightblood crap, like from the beginning. And I just said crap. I don't mean it's crap. I just mean all that stuff. So I think season three sort of really struggled from them wanting to do so much. And then I think what it was, and we'll get into talking about the specifics of this, but to be honest, what crippled this season in two different ways was Lexa. Her death crippled the season in obvious ways, but how much they focused on her in the first half of the season also crippled the season because it broke the flow a little bit. They had this amazing character in Lexa, and they had this amazing ship in Clexa. Like, we can all agree, I think, that both of those elements were amazing and really elevated the show. But they also knew that Alicia Denman Carey was going to leave the show, that they only had her for a number of episodes, and then she had a job on Fear the Walking Dead. So they wanted to get as much out of her while they had her, while not compromising any of the other stories that they were going to tell. So I think that together sort of ended up with them having just too much story. And they didn't balance that very well. I think that's fair to say. And that doesn't mean that I don't enjoy the different elements of the story. And it doesn't mean that having seen it now three times, I'm really appreciative of all the developments. And I feel like in season four, they all pay off. And nothing feels like it didn't need to be there. But it does feel like they had just one or two story threads that they should have dropped. You know, they should have picked and chosen. They shouldn't just have done, in my opinion, they shouldn't just have done everything because they ended up with some discrepancies. But I think that's something that they learned from, and it's something that I think we're seeing in season four. They've really sort of taken to heart that criticism.
Well, I was going to say too, just very quickly, because I feel like my little review was negative. I think I told you off air when we recorded the regular show that the thing about season three is like, it's the season I'm most excited to watch again, because I feel like I can enjoy more of the storylines better,
for sure,
in a better way, because it is hard to kind of keep up with everything while everything's happening. Cause like, obviously you're more excited about some things than other things. But yeah, like I would love to rewatch this season over, and I feel like I could get more out of it knowing what the end game is for the season.
Exactly. And this is also the one where The 100 reveals itself as a show that I think in many ways is made for binging, you know, like it's made for consuming and thinking about and going back and re-experiencing as a whole, you know? And I definitely think, again, it's, I know that Edlys Mérimée sort of disagrees with this, but I think it, that a show improves on second watch isn't to me necessarily a bad thing, you know, because there's so much that they packed into it, and it all makes sense. Some of it you have to dig a little deeper, but it does make sense once you dig down to it. I like that. I prefer that to shows that have too much filler, but that doesn't mean that the criticism isn't valid.
Well, I don't think it's not that I don't think that you should be able to get more out of a show on the second watch, but I don't think that it shouldn't, like, not make sense until you watch it the second time.
Yeah.
Right. Like then it's a problem, I think. And I kind of still hold that about some of the things that happened in this season of The 100. And also just to speak on binging, like this was a really hard season to binge because of current political climates.
Right.
It was actually really difficult. And I had to take a bunch of breaks that I didn't have to take in, I think we've talked about when we did season one and two, like Pam would start watching and then I'd be like, oh no, I'm behind, and then watch it all in like 48 hours. I could not do that with season three. I had to spread it out a lot. This one was harder for sure. And I actually don't really want to go back and rewatch it. Like I'm very excited to see season four. Like I'm really excited that after we've recorded this, I'll be able to finally catch up and like see what's happening. Spoiler alert, I still want to watch this show, but I don't currently feel any particular desire to go back and watch season three. Definitely not like right now.
Yeah. It's a harsh season. And I think we should maybe go into talking about Pike, because that is kind of, we can save the Ally stuff because Pike does narratively come first. Because I think the thing about Pike's rise to power when this happened back in, when they wrote it back in 2015 and when it aired in early 2016, you know, I mean, obviously it's not a direct parallel to Trump, because Pike is definitely not a Trump personality, but just the things that motivated his rise to power, the fear mongering and the othering of the grounders that went into making Pike a figure and his like hard line something that the Arcadians wanted to vote for. I think that does bring Trump to mind in a way that was almost a little bit prescient, because again, they wrote this several years before Trump was elected. At the same time, that doesn't change the fact that watching this post Trump, it's almost too real, you know? It feels it is hard to watch. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, of course, like I think I'm the only host that's like not that you guys aren't informed, but I am living in Trump's America right now. I'm from California. I'm directly affected, as is the rest of the world, because politics transcends borders and boundaries and things like that. And while it is like it's kind of like a harsh microscope on what's going on specifically right now with a lot of how like what Trump used to get into power, I would also argue that like the idea of us versus them is something that was like very relevant in the United States for years before Trump started his candidacy for presidency and then eventually won.
It's the climate that allowed him to run on that platform.
Yeah. And just knowing what we know now because of what you explained about what Rothenberg wanted to do with The 100, like knowing that he wanted to create a sci-fi show, sci-fi so often pulls from real world experiences and magnifies them. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were directly influenced by a lot of what had been going on in the United States even before 2017 came to fruition. So it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I did not feel like this didn't feel believable. And it wasn't a thing that I was like, oh, well, if this had happened before Trump, I would be like, wow, this is outrageous. Like, no, I mean, it's certainly not the first TV show to tell a story like this. I mean, literally my job is to study history. So like, this is not a surprising thing to me, but I found it hard to watch because I don't feel like it was earned on the show. And I think this was a casualty of the rushing perhaps. And I think I've been trying to work out, like trying to sort through what I feel like they could have done differently. And I think it was that they had all these new characters come in from, is it Farm Station? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah.
From a farm station who are saying like, oh, we had this really traumatic time and it was really different to you and blah, blah, blah. But we never saw any of that. And I think the show has in the past done really well with when it has chosen to include flashbacks. I think that's one of the things that I really have enjoyed consistently across it, that the flashbacks are always really well timed. They're really well chosen. They're not too reliant on them, but they've always been super effective. And this is a moment where I feel like we needed to see that because otherwise we just get these characters come in saying all this stuff and it's like, yeah, but this is a perfect example of like telling, not showing, because we see these incredibly extreme viewpoints come in and we get to see like early Pike and, you know, maybe where some of this has developed, but we don't get to see the transformation that has taken place for these characters. And so as a viewer watching it, you're like, I mean, I understand logically like what it is that you're saying, but the Bellamy stuff, I mean, we can argue about this, but it does not make sense to me. So that was a large part of this storyline. The Pike, Abby, Kane sort of conflict was really interesting. I thought like that was a really good idea to introduce a character, like another adult character who wasn't just totally crazy like Jaha, but had some kind of vague logic behind like what he was, what they were doing. Like that was really interesting because, you know, it's not a secret. I think that the teenage characters get more of the meat of the show, like more interesting things to do. So that was a fun dynamic, but yeah, the Pike stuff, it didn't feel earned. And because they went so extreme with it, with the massacre, if they hadn't gone like quite that far, I might not have been so bothered by it. But because they went to there, it really, I just kept thinking about what they did with Finn in season 2 and how that was horrifying also, but I understood how it had happened and how he got to that point. And I did not understand that for the characters who were following Pike on this season, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
It absolutely does make sense. And I think, I mean, obviously there's two things in this, and the Bellamy stuff is definitely something that I think we should get into. But on what you said about flashbacks, this is the thing that I have always said, always for a year since this aired, that what this season was missing was like a Lost episode, The Other 48 Days. You know, I mean, I don't know if you guys watched Lost,
exactly, but there was
like, you know, you go back to the crash and like literally the crash and you just show really quickly what went through, you know, don't tell us that, because the thing is, you know, they're attacked by grounders. The kids run and play in the snow. The kids are shut down by the, like these Asgeda, these Ice Nation people were made to see, and we do see it a little bit, that they are not like the grounders we know. You know, we thought that these grounders were harsh, but they were acting in self-defense. It sounds like these Esqueda people are literally just vicious assholes. Like, you know, like it really sounds like they are like villains. And for us to have to accept that without seeing it is really hard. And I absolutely agree. And I think as well, when it comes to Pike getting Bellamy on his side, especially, but also Monty with his mother makes a little bit more sense. But I think, again, I think it does make sense, but I would have loved to see, and there was a scene that was cut of this, and I haven't seen that scene actually, but there was a scene that was cut between the two of them that apparently made it make a lot more sense. And just having more of all of that. And again, it comes down to pacing. It comes down to the season not being long enough to support it. And so in that way, I totally agree with you that it didn't feel earned, but I don't agree that it doesn't feel earned because the story, because it doesn't make sense, but it doesn't feel earned because we didn't get to feel what the people in Farm Station felt. You know, we didn't get to experience these Esqueda grounders at work. All we know are the grounders that we know, and that doesn't align with what they're telling us. And so when Pike comes in and he's like, all grounders are the same, it's like, but no. Well, how can you, like that logic to him, he just comes barreling in with that logic. And that doesn't make sense to us because the only grounders we know are the ones that are not like the ones he knows.
Yeah, and I think the other problem for me is that I still feel like the 100 has a problem, like a quote-unquote, like, native problem. Like, it has a problem with the depictions of the grounders already. And I don't think it has successfully dealt with that even in season 3. It's getting better. It certainly gets better, but I'm not convinced that they really understand the dynamics totally of like what it is that they're saying at times. Because there are still moments in this where like Murphy is saying to Indra, like, you know, don't be the savage that they think you are, like whatever. It's this kind of very loaded terminology. And so when Pike comes in and starts saying these things, you're meant to think, oh, like this is horrible and like outrageous and whatever. But like the show is not self-aware enough of like those dynamics itself for that to be truly effective for me. And so I think that's part of the issue as well for me when watching this, because I'm like, I know what you're trying to do with this, but it's not successful because you haven't successfully shown that like the other characters are able to navigate this. And that's not intentional. Like, I know that part of it is not intentional because you think that the way that you're depicting these sort of dynamics between the 100 and the grounders and like the mountain men last season is all fine. And I, as a viewer, do not think it's fine at times. So I think that also plays into it as well. It's just like a kind of added layer. I mean, it's a more meta layer, but it definitely affects my viewing of this whole storyline, if that makes sense.
It definitely does. I think that there's a lot in the 100. And again, that's like a whole other discussion about the ways in which it's skirting the lines of, you know, the sky people as invaders coming into a land where there's already people versus the sky people being this people that is coming home to a land that used to be theirs, that they're no longer welcome in. You know, there's so much going on. And I think just in terms of the ways that sci-fi does draw on real history versus it being allowed to tell a story where that has its own history, I think it is a tough balance especially for a show that has so few episodes, you know. And it, again, I think it comes down to the fact that it's trying to do so much. No, I definitely see a point. I maybe not completely agree with it, but I definitely see it. And you're definitely not the only one. Pam, do you have any thoughts on this before we start talking about Bellamy?
No, let's move on to Bellamy.
Okay. So at the core of this storyline with Pike, and I think the thing that most of the fandom are frustrated by is the way in which Bellamy jumps onto Pike's side and goes against all of his friends and the grounders and is very quick to regard them as the enemy. And I think just my pitch here, because, you know, I'm studying the show so closely and I'm watching it through so many times and I'm talking to so many people that are watching it to me, it makes a lot of sense in terms of who Bellamy is, because Bellamy, from his perspective, which I think is something the Hundred is very good at, always remembering, like always taking its characters' own personal experiences and letting that inform their actions for better or worse. And sometimes I think they ask, maybe you might say they ask too much of the audience, but on the other hand, you also might say that they are speaking to the audience that know these characters like as well as the writers do, in that they don't ever let their characters act based on knowledge that they don't personally have or experiences they haven't personally had. So what Bellamy is going through in season three is obviously a very, very, very different thing than what Clark is going through. And I think what the audience is going through Clark, which is, you know, assimilating into Grounder culture and getting to know these people personally and getting to truly understand and see herself as, you know, Clark and Lexa sort of really mirror each other and really learn from each other. And so I think for Bellamy, from his perspective, is so different, because when he says that he has been at war with the Grounders since they landed, you know, from his perspective, he's right. From his perspective, he landed on the ground. He was attacked by Grounders. He fought back against the Grounders. He was always running from Grounders no matter what. And even when he was in Mount Weather and Clark was treating with the Grounders after what had happened with Finn, you know, that's when Bellamy went away, and that's when Clark had all, and then the other characters had all their experiences with Grounders. Bellamy was in Mount Weather then. Then the Grounders betrayed them. Then Clark left. And then for those 3 months when he found sort of a semi-peace, he was totally isolated from the Grounders, and all he knew was that there was like a ceasefire, that they couldn't cross some lines and then they wouldn't be attacked. Then he trusted a Grounder, Echo, and then she blew up Mount Weather and killed his girlfriend. Rip Gina, she was real, hashtag. And then he met Pike. And I think from when you look at that, when you look at everything that he's done in terms of protecting his people, when that army came, people might tell him that it was there to protect them. But I think that Bellamy truly believed that that was not true. You know, I think that Bellamy believed that that army was there to attack them, or maybe it was there to protect them until Lexa changed her mind again and ordered them to attack. So I think when he went out there with Pike to eliminate that army before, and again, another scene we didn't get to see when he kind of changed his mind and wanted to spare the wounded, I think he believed that he was fighting an enemy. You know, I don't believe that, and then when we saw him realize that that Pike wasn't only going after Grounders, but he was actually going to hurt Lincoln and Kane and Sinclair. Obviously, that was when he changed his mind. Anyway, that is all something that you can say logically, and it doesn't excuse that viewers felt betrayed by him. But I do. I just want to point out that from sort of a pure character's standpoint, I'm actually kind of appreciative of them going this route with him, because I think it's true to the character in a way that sort of puts character over audience in a way. And I appreciate that as a fan of the show. But ... I also appreciate that it will make people very, very angry. So I'm done. Go ahead. Be angry. No one's angry.
Pam, what do you think? I just talked a bunch about Pike,
Well, I mean, like, I get what you're saying, and you make a good point. I just think that the most frustrating thing about Bellamy is that it almost kind of feels like the show makes you hate him so that you can like him again. And it's just, like, I don't know. He's just one of those characters for me that it's just, like, it's always, like, two steps forward, one step back. So I get why people like him, but then it's, like, the narrative just gives you so much to dislike about him too. But at the end of the day, I just think he's like incredibly impressionable as well. And that really feeds into this idea of being able to follow somebody like Pike, who raises some valid concerns for people that just fear what is different. Mm-hmm. And I think you see him come back to himself a lot towards the end of the season, which I really appreciate, because I think everybody's favorite Bellamy is a Bellamy that is of sound mind, and sometimes it kind of feels like he's a little unhinged. So,
because he has always been so firmly us versus them, you know, that has never gone away, and I think they do stay true to that. But it does sort of make for, like, as a viewer, you want him to get past that, and then what I appreciate is that they don't pander to that. It's a bad word to use, but you know what I mean. Like they let him be imperfect in that way, and they let him mm-hmm. stay true to that. But at the same time, when you're telling a story at this pace, you do want the characters to learn and grow at a faster pace than what Bellamy did in season 3, I think.
And maybe that's why it's so easy to be frustrated by him, because the story moves so fast, and yet his character mm-hmm. is almost stagnant in this, like...
Yeah, it felt a little stagnant after season 2. Because mm-hmm. if this had been after season 1, I don't think people
totally would have made sense for him mm-hmm. to regress. But yeah, I mean, like, especially that he had so much growing. He did so much growing in season 2. And I get that, like, he's upset about, like, Lexa leaving and about everything that's happened with the Grounders and all of that stuff. And Pike gives him a reason to be angry and gives him an outlet, like, upon which to fuel and direct that anger. But
Pike feeds on his his anger about Gina dying. And that's, again, that comes back to pacing again, because if we'd known Gina, if she'd been more than just a character they could fridge for his development, you know, like, if she'd actually been a character that we had come to know, then I think her death, like, the way that Jasper is totally destroyed by Maya's death, you know, that's not something we question. But I think, you know, Maya
and
Bellamy
were... Oh my God, I questioned it.
Honestly.
I hate Jasper so much.
Okay, well, we will get there.
Let me say on Gina, I do not buy that at all, because this is the argument that you and I continue to have, Selena, which is like, I understand, like, you love this show and you love the people who create it, but you give them too much credit for, like, things that they did not do. Like, the Gina stuff, it doesn't matter if it would have been more effective if we had spent time with her. We didn't spend any time with her. Like, I literally did not remember her name until we started having this conversation. We met her for, like, 10 minutes, and then she was fridged. And then we're meant to expect, like, oh, Bellamy's angry about that. But, like, it's not earned, so it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter if it would have worked more if we had seen more of her on screen or more of their relationship, because we didn't see more of her on screen and we didn't see their relationship. So, like...
No, I totally think that that's a fair opinion, but just to sort of to clarify that, I think what I like about a show like The 100 is that I like that there are... And again, this is something that we sort of disagree with on what we enjoy in shows, and I think that's totally fine. But I think when I come into a show like The 100 and I'm able to be so excited about it, despite of what's missing, is because I like being able to fill in the blanks. Certainly not everyone feels that way. There's a lot of people that are frustrated with The 100 in the way that you are. But in a way, the fact that we don't get to know Gina, but that I know... that who, like, I can, even just her being on screen for like a second is enough for me to fill in the blanks myself. I think that's the strength of The 100. I think it's the strength of The 100 that they can pull in characters and that I feel like I know them even though I don't. And it's like, maybe it's a personal, the show is connecting to me personally, but I like that. I don't, you know, I think it's good. So I think for me, I'm very aware of general opinion. But I'm also just trying to stay true to, like, my own kind of, like, well, I agree that Gina was fridged, like I just said, and I agree that they should have had more with her. At the same time, it doesn't ruin it for me that it's kind of like a chink in the armor. It doesn't break it apart. You know what I mean? It's, again, it's totally fair. I totally get what you're saying. But I also just, you know... when I'm thinking about it, I can fill in those blanks and that enhances the enjoyment for me.
Well, just sort of back to what Pam was saying about Bellamy, I completely agree, Pam. I think you said regression, and that's how I felt about this as well. And Selena, like, you make a very good case, like Pam said, but I don't agree with it. And I think because the way that you paint that is as if this is like a continual progression of, like, things that make sense based on his character. And I definitely felt like he regressed just completely too much. Like, it's not that if Bellamy had like gone down this kind of path and sort of toyed with the idea of Pike and, you know, maybe being swayed by some of those opinions, it's not that I would have had an issue with that, because I appreciate that he's a complex character, and this isn't a matter of like, oh, I don't like the show because it made me dislike the cute boy on the show. It's that, following what all we saw in season two, it really didn't make sense to me. The Bellamy moment that rang the truest to me in this season was when he yells at Clark when she comes back and he says, like, you left us, like, you left me, I had to deal with all of this. And I felt like that was the bit where I was like, oh, if they had tapped into more of this, I think that would have made more sense to me. But, you know, Bellamy, I disagree that this fits with his character. And like, we're just going to go in circles about this, but I guess I'll just say my part. Because I think the part of this that kind of stuck out the most to me is like, Bellamy has always had an issue with authority, again, based on like his past experiences, as we keep saying, everything that happened with Octavia, it's completely understandable. They don't give me a good enough reason for like why he would suddenly turn to Pike, because we've seen, although he's sort of accepted Kane/Abby as kind of, you know, being in charge, we saw him really struggle with that in season two when they come down. And we also see that when he thinks that he knows better or has been down here for longer, like, he is not afraid to stand up to someone just because they happen to be older than him. Like, he is very tapped into that idea of, oh, I have been here longer. Like, I have the experience. Clark and I have this experience that you do not have because you have not been down here. Like, you sent us down here. And maybe because he's a little older than the other kids, like, he doesn't have that hesitation to sort of go up against the adults that happen to be in charge. So for him to suddenly fall in line like a good soldier in this, that's one of the parts that really did not make sense to me in particular. And then also, like, again, we're going to go back to this like thing I was talking about with Lexa at the end of last season, just from removing emotions from it, from a purely strategic kind of point of view. Bellamy has always been very strategic. He's got this kind of logical, strategic mind that we saw especially develop in Mount Weather in season two. I think he should have been able to see, and like, there is plenty of evidence to see that Pike is damaging and is dangerous for the people that Bellamy claims to want to protect, because he has been around for long enough to know that regardless of like how many preemptive massacres they commit, the Grounders will retaliate, and doesn't matter if they have guns, like, he's seen the Grounders fight. I mean, arguably, you know, that's why he was so worried about having them outside of outside of their camp in the first place. So he knows that this is only going to provoke them, and he can't, for him to even pretend like, oh, we're going to be fine because we have guns and we'll just kill enough of them in the first place, is like a strategic failure as far as he's concerned. And he's been shown to be smarter than that. So that's why this feels like a regression. And I think if it had happened after season one, it would have made more sense. It still wouldn't have made like total sense, but it certainly doesn't make sense after everything we've seen him do in season two. Mm-hmm. So
right.
I'll leave it there.
Yeah. There's, I think that basically what it comes down to is there's a lot of things you have to accept in order to accept the storyline. And, you know, one of them is you have to accept that Bellamy was so broken by what happened with Gina that he was in a vulnerable place. You have to accept that while he's strategic and certainly has a lot of leadership abilities, he's still in the place when he's learning to be a leader. And he was, you know, in the sort of vying, which I actually find this very interesting, sort of on the sidelines of Kane and Pike vying to be Bellamy's mentor. You know, they're both vying to be his leader, like the one that's gonna push him from like leader-ish to leader. And he makes the wrong choice, and then him trying to justify that choice, he's questioning Pike from the very beginning. Like, you see that in the fabric of Bob Morley's acting and then the things he says. But you have to sort of accept that all of that is made clear enough in the narrative for you to buy it. And if you don't buy it, then you're not going to buy Bellamy's this story choice for Bellamy, and I think that's sort of like what I was trying to get to earlier, is that I have sort of, I accept it, but I think it's totally fair that other people don't accept it, because I think it's a big ask from the show, and it is sort of expecting its audience to play along and to take what they say at face value. And I don't think you need to do that as an audience, but anyway, that was basically a long way of saying that I think your reading of Bellamy is also totally fair. I don't 100% agree with it, but I also think that my opinion is definitely not necessarily the right one. It's just kind of the one that I've built up to make sense of everything that's happened. And I've come to a place where I think it makes perfect sense. But logically, I know that just because I've come to that place doesn't mean that other people will. And certainly, as you know, I wrote the term backlash in the doc, and certainly there has been a lot of backlash to this, both from people who hate Bellamy and from people who love Bellamy and who didn't think, like you, Merrima and Pam, that this was an earned development for him. Going into season 4, no spoilers, but the writers are definitely aware of what Bellamy did, and they're definitely not letting him off the hook in terms of him wanting to make up for that. So you have that to look forward to.
Can we talk about Allie?
Yes, I would love to talk about Allie. So what do you want to talk about with Allie?
Oh, I really love this storyline. So I thought this was really, really clever, the way that it tied in with the commander and all of that. Obviously, I love the flashbacks, as I have said before, of Becca and sort of everything that was happening there. And I still want to know more about this, because I guess I don't totally understand exactly how it works, but it's sci-fi, so like, you know, all right, cool. Jaha was the worst, but I think maybe what they were trying to do in this, and again, I would say not totally successfully, is do the bait and switch of, you know, we're also worried about Pike, that we don't realize the actual villain or the actual issue of the problem of the series is Jaha, and like what he's sort of doing mm-hmm. behind the scenes while Pike is distracting everyone. And I thought that was done okay. Not, you know, the Pike stuff not done so well, but I think the Jaha, like, Allie part of that was done really well, of him just kind of being in the background of like all these events and what's happening. And I mean, I thought it was really funny that the City of Light is just like our world at the end, when Clark is just like running around. And I was like, oh, it's just a city. Like, literally.
It's Vancouver.
Yeah, that's all right. That's fine. No, I mean, how that all tied in with Lexar and the Nightbloods and all of that, I thought was just super fascinating. And I think showed a real strength of the show, that it can do these really, like, capital letter sci-fi plots really well. But yeah, I just really liked it, and I thought it was super interesting. And like, this is one bit of the show I would definitely like to sort of go back and watch like a supercut of all this stuff and think about this a bit more and kind of how this worked. I mean, I think it also gave us some of the most harrowing moments of the season, with Kane and Abby in particular, and then Abby and Clark at the end, obviously. But yeah, I thought, like, just what a fascinating kind of interesting mechanism they worked out here to both explain like a lot of the questions that I had about Lexa, and also to give the characters a chance to sort of have these really intense scenes where, for the audience, like, these really felt really earned. And also all of the stuff with Raven with this storyline, I just thought it was really, really well done.
Yeah, agreed. I think that, and again, you know, we'll get to Lexa, but in terms of the story they were telling around Lexa, I think it was so, so interesting. And the thing about the episode with all these flashbacks, obviously that was 13, and it was the one where Lexa died, and it's hard to, I didn't put it on my list of favorite episodes just because it's hard to do because of her dying, but it truly is one of the best episodes written and acted, and the way the flashbacks are structured. It's actually Javier Grillo-Maxwatch, who used to write for Lost, who did that one, and that influence is obviously right there, you know, at the forefront. And the reveal that the Grounders were ultimately descended, I mean, they're all earth people in the end, but the fact that their basic religion is built around the sky person and technology is, it's just such a mind flip, you know, that I loved that. And I loved everything with that. And the fact that there is this commander chip that they put in someone's brain and it fuses their what? It's crazy. I think it's so cool. And it's a shame that that got lost in a way, you know?
But it didn't, though, I feel. Well, at least not for me, because I think that was the... Allie was always a storyline I was more interested in, which is why it was kind of hard to keep up throughout the rest of the series, like the season. Mm-hmm. But like Merrima, I think that... Well, because Merrima and I both had such issues with Lexa last season. Like, we just didn't understand her, really. And I think that, like, getting this last piece of the puzzle just puts everything so much more into perspective. And it was just... Yeah, it was brilliantly done, and it was just so good. It was definitely my favorite part of the season, for sure.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so just to summarize a little bit, and then if you guys have anything else to say, you know, we basically found out that Becca, the one who also looks like Allie, was the Becca's technology Allie, end of the world, but she was in space when that happened, and then she went back to space, basically sacrificing the 13th, station that ended up being the Unity Day event to become the first commander and basically started the grounders by giving them all this thing called night blood that has been passed down through the surviving grounders and is the thing that determines who will be the next commander. And this AI chip in the back of her brain is sort of influencing her and all commanders after her. So basically all the commanders are part AI, but the AI enhances what's already there, which is why obviously Lexa, unlike most of the past commanders, was really sort of into peace. And that leads into a whole other thing that fandom is still really heavily debating, is how did someone like Becca, so technologically minded and so like not seeming warmongering at all, like how did this Allie 2.0... Becca's legacy become this blood must have blood, you know, we hate technology society. Like, how did that happen? What happened from her landing on the ground to the ground, like in the 100 years? That's not that long. You know, there's still so many unanswered questions here. And was Allie 2.0 really that much better than Allie 1.0? You know, what's the difference? Like, what's good and what's bad? It's so interesting. I love this.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in this, and I think this is a part like I didn't feel like Pam said in season two. I was like, I know everyone loves Lexa, but like I am yet to see a reason for why. And it wasn't that I didn't think I would, but like I can only speak about what I had seen, and I had only seen two seasons, and Lexa was not. She just wasn't the character that she is in season three. Like, not that she's a different character, but we just didn't have the time with Lexa. And I get that that might be difficult to separate for, like, if people are rewatching with us or whatever. But the way that this all tied up, this is kind of an aspect where I felt like all of these questions that were raised by Allie, I didn't feel they were sort of accidental or things that they hadn't thought about. You know, versus some of the stuff that happened with Lexa in season two, I was like, oh, that's a plot hole. Like, but this didn't feel like that. It felt really intentional. It felt really thought out. It felt a little rushed, but for the most part, I think it was really effective. And I mean, can we talk about Lexa and that?
Yeah, like, I think this is a good time to talk about Lexa. Yeah.
So I love Lexa in this season. She's definitely one of my favorite characters. I don't know, Pam, if you would agree with this, but like, I finally was like, oh, I get it now. Like, I understand now, A, why like all the fans are really invested in her, but also we finally, rather than, again, like my number one issue with this show, like, don't tell me things, show me things. Like, rather than everyone being like, Lexa is a visionary leader, I was like, I mean, I've yet to see any evidence of that. Like, we finally saw her be a leader in this season because we had the time with her. And I think the way that Lexa died was like hugely problematic, but the fact of her dying itself is not, is how I feel about it. And I also think they did an okay job with as they revealed more and more about this 2.0, the AI 2.0 or whatever, about being like, well, Lex is not totally gone, and like, it's not, I get that people are frustrated. They're like, bury your gays trope. I guess we may as well just address this upfront, right? Like, like Buffy style was just completely ridiculous that they didn't, that they weren't aware of this or whatever, you know, fake argument they made. Right. I don't care. But like, that was completely ridiculous. And the timing of it with them, like, finally being together and then this happening and, like, you know, her literally taking the bullet for Clark was, like, way too on the nose. But at the same time, I mean, she had to go to another show, right? And the only way Lexa was going to leave this show is if she died. That's pretty obvious. And at the end of the day, like, Clark is the main character. So things happen for Clark's development. And like, Finn dying was also for Clark's, I mean, the way they did it, that's also for Clark's development, right? So I don't think like the fact of Lexa dying, you know, for Clark is inherently a bad thing. I just think they handled it really terribly, like really, really terribly. I don't think they can justify that. And I'm sure you can speak, Selena, about like what the showrunners like may have said about it later on. Hopefully they apologized. But for Lexa herself on this season, I thought she was finally like a properly well-rounded character. She was really interesting. All of the interactions that we saw with the kids that she was training, all of the stuff with Rowan was really interesting. And, you know, I was like really, I mean, I knew she died. That's the one thing that Pam and I knew, I think, coming into this show. But I didn't mm-hmm. sort of know, I sort of knew it was the bury your gays thing, but I didn't really know how it went down. So I was obviously like really upset when that happened. But I don't think that in itself like negates all of the good that Lexa was in this season. And she was like a total force for this show. And I mean, and I think maybe also the show kind of realized like Lexa had become too much of the show. Like you were saying at the start, like her and Clark were like too good together. Like the actresses are too good on screen together. And I mean, what are you going to do? Like you can't have the two of them running the show for the rest of, you know, however long it's on TV. So something's got to change. And like one of them's got to go because they get to the point where like they're not being separated unless one of them dies. And that was really beautifully done, I thought, like very, very sensitively done with Lexa, like bowing to Clark and, you know, getting all of their kids to make the promise that they will like honor the treaty or like whatever with Clark. Like all of that stuff I thought was really, really good. And I loved Lexa in this. So I'm totally team Lexa as of season 3, but like, I do not regret my season 2 opinions.
Co-sign with that. I think that you and I have share very similar thoughts when it comes to Lexa. And I think it's hard for us too, because, you know, we're coming into the 100, not necessarily knowing too much about the plot, but like with some preconceived notions. And like the one notion mm-hmm. that, the one thing we did know was like everyone loves Lexa. Lexa's amazing. So I think that that's why it was easy for us to be a little bit let down by her at first. And also because we tend to ask a lot of these questions, like, but why? Why is she so amazing? Like, why is she so great? I don't doubt that she's a strong female character, like hashtag females are strong as hell, but I just needed to see more of that and to see like kind of more where she comes from, and also to see her develop into the person that she is before she does tragically pass was also a wonderful moment for her character. Like just transcending this idea mm-hmm. of blood must have blood was huge.
Yeah.
And it just completely humanized her, and it was beautiful. And it's so sad that we don't have more of her, but what more could you really ask for? I mean, at least that they gave her a great development before she had to leave. So,
right. I agree with everything you said. And it's kind of my sort of official stance as well, that the bury your gays trope, the way she died was awful. I mean, no hold barred. It was terrible. And it's actually also the first thing I thought before I even thought of Willow and Tara, I thought of, in Lost again in season 2, another episode that Javi wrote was the one in which Shannon gets shot by a stray bullet. So I actually, right when I saw the episode, I was like, oh, he just ripped himself off. The Will and Tara thing only came to me after that. So that was pretty interesting. But But I think the thing that sort of has led to this huge controversy and this huge backlash was several things. First of all, the writers, I think they were so unaware of what they had created, of the nature of, because there, it's no secret that The 100 was popular before Lexa, but the introduction of Lexa and Clexa just exploded the show. You know, suddenly here was this huge, like, great show that had LGBT representation front and center. It had this amazing couple, like, power couple, just, like, ruling the world, and both characters were amazing. Lexa was maybe a little bit more iconic than Clark for a lot of people, I think, but Clark was also obviously loved, and she was the lead. So it drew a whole new audience to the show that, as far as this audience was concerned, there was no issue with it being the Lexa show. You know, like, here came this amazing character that outshone for a while. The show allowed her to outshine everyone else. And they were okay with that. Because why couldn't she be the lead? Like, why couldn't she come in and stay and be amazing? And why couldn't Clexa be, like, the crux of the show? Because they were such great representation. And I think that's the thing with The 100. The talk of representation is always, well, how can you support a show that killed off its lesbian amazing character? And then also, of course, Lincoln. And my argument is also, well, are you, like, that's fair, but how can I not support a show that has Clark and like literally the entire rest of the cast that also offer really important representation, right? So there's always that discourse going on, that Discord as well. And then it was just a case of the writers, as I said, sort of unaware of the magnitude of what they had, because they treated Lexa and her death as they would have any other story, which included the writers when rumors sort of began to come out that she was going to leave the show. You know, they started trying to throw people off the scent. You know, they started trying to hide the fact that she was going to die. But essentially it all led to, you know, when she died and the way she died, and the Lexa and Clexa fans felt drawn in and felt lied to and felt betrayed. And one of the things you can say that the really good thing that has come from this is obviously, as you guys are probably aware, the Clexa fandom and ClexaCon and LGBT Deserve Better movements have done amazing things. You know, their attempts to get the show canceled isn't something that I stand behind, because I think, again, that kind of intentionally overlooks all of the representation that The 100 still offers, including Clark. But in terms of what they've done for visibility and for LGBT rights and justice for all of the other characters that were killed in 2016 by the same trope, I think that's really positive. But I think The 100 is sort of, I believe personally, is taking an unfair amount of brunt of a general industry criticism, because apart from the circumstances, as you guys have already said, Lexa had to die and Lexa couldn't come in and take over the show because they were telling a different story, and they leaned into the popularity of Lexa a little bit too much. At the same time, they also knew how great this character was and they wanted to take advantage of that while they had her.
Yeah, that'll make sense. I think, I really don't like the idea of the writers, if they knew, if people were asking about the ship or whatever, and they knew, like, well, Lexa dies in this episode, that they were like, no, like, we wouldn't do that, or like, whatever.
I don't think that's what they did. I think trying to hide, you know what I mean? Like they would with any character.
Yeah, I think the fact is, like, but it's, she's not like any other character. And so I do think, like,
exactly.
There are definitely some failings on their part that I think it's fine to acknowledge. But
exactly.
I mean, I don't even know if we've even explicitly talked about this, but I think first of all, Lexa lingers over the rest of the season. So if we can step away from the actual way that she died for a second, I think they did a really great job of showing how important she was to Clark, like how strong their relationship was, the sort of legacy of her. Like, she's sort of this ghost figure that sort of continues to haunt Clark. And we really see the effects of that, even as Clark doesn't really have time to grieve. So I think that part was done really, really well. I also think, and this is a bit, I think we may have kind of skipped over in season 2 in all of our sort of why is Lex a great discussion, but like the depiction of, I mean, I guess she hasn't explicitly labeled herself, so like bisexuality or pansexuality for Clark is so well done, I think. I personally find, anyway, for this show. And obviously, again, do not condone the way that Lexa was killed off, and it's a really important conversation to have, and it's certainly an important conversation for like the 100 team to be involved in. But yeah, I think calls to cancel the show are certainly not productive. I mean, like how many shows do we have, first of all, with a bisexual lead that's done in a very non-issue way? And also, what would people have rather that they just didn't have a female, like, same-sex relationship at all? I mean, what's the alternative here, that they hadn't even tried to do this? They executed it poorly. They did not do this well, but I'm glad that they tried, you know.
Yes.
And we got some beautiful scenes between them, and I think that's really important, because like you have to try, and then you have to give people time to grow. And so obviously I haven't seen season 4 yet, so a lot of this, if they did something similar to this again, I would be furious with the show. But I know that they film this like before it airs, right? It's all locked, so they don't have a chance to like respond to things.
So they can't. No.
Yeah. So it's
pretty precarious. So
you can't be like, oh well, they didn't like address this very well in the rest of season 3. Be like, okay, well now they have season 4. This is their time to like go into this a little more, or see, you know, how their representation is going to be affected going forward. And that's the test. Like, this isn't the test.
Exactly. And there are multiple LGBT characters. Let's just stress that word, multiple LGBT characters. I'm like terrified that they're killing off any of the other ones now. Like, they cannot do that. But I think they know that. And that's the thing. And that's what I said right when this happened, and when people were turning against the show. That's basically what you just said is what I said, is that I really appreciate that they try. And I really appreciate that they respond to the criticism, and that they commit to being better and to learning and to growing and to not making this mistake again. And I think at the end of the day that it's good that people try, because there's so many pieces of media that don't even bother. You know, we've had this conversation on Hype so many times, like Marvel, they just don't give a crap. There's no representation at all in that regard. And then you have a show like The 100 who's like, look at all these amazing things. And then and then they kind of go overboard and they kill some of them off. And it's like, whoops, that's not great. But at the end of the day, you know, they are committed to being better. And I would rather give The 100 a chance to be even better than it already is than say, screw it, you made a mistake, go away forever.
Yeah.
Although, and give the spotlight to someone else.
Just quickly, I do have one question on the LGBT representation, which is like something I did notice. Obviously we get Miller, and we find out like Miller's boyfriend is a Brian. So like they're reunited, but to my memory, they never kiss on screen. And then I was thinking about
they kiss
it. And
once.
Do they have like a proper kiss? Cause I feel like we've
they
only
have a kiss,
seen,
yeah.
Yeah. We mostly get like,
they're definitely
female.
Not as tactile and that's another complaint that I have on the show.
I'm not
sure
boys.
If that comes from the actors or, because that's the thing, is that female sexuality, and again, a whole other discussion, how that's in a large part in media, some like slightly performative in terms of the audience. And I think that's something The 100, like, let the boys kiss too, you know, like let's get over that. But no, you're right. But they do kiss once.
Yeah. I would like, I mean, that, I think that is one aspect that could be definitely improved for future seasons, like to have that like equality of actual like representation of the different relationships on screen. Obviously Clark and Lexa was like more central than Miller, but you know, let the boys
even
kiss.
Even Clark and Nyla too,
Yeah, let boys
let everyone kiss.
Exactly. Everyone kiss everyone. I mean, they basically do on this show anyways.
Exactly.
Are we going to talk about Lincoln?
Yeah, unless you have something else to say on that, Pam.
No, I just think that just to reiterate the point, because it's very important, media and movies and, well, television is like at the more at the forefront than film, but it just takes a really long time for Hollywood to accept the normative of what is normal. And is that okay? No. But should we berate them for trying? No. So I think everybody needs to find a happy middle ground, because, you know, getting things canceled or calling for people's heads when they're trying, and we've talked about this with like movies very recently on hype, is just counterproductive. So basically, pick your hill to die on and hold people accountable in the right way, because that's the only way we can move forward. So,
yeah. Okay, so from one controversy to another, let's talk about Lincoln. So, but a little bit of background on this. So, Ricky Whittle had been, I think, feeling like not satisfied with how much screen time he was getting for a while. You know, it's kind of no secret going back over the show that the writers sort of, I think, struggled to find a place for Lincoln in the show in terms of Octavia, in terms of the other characters. And in season three especially, he felt like Lincoln had they had planned a totally different arc for Lincoln. And then partly because of Lexa, ironically, partly because of how much Lexa ended up filling the space, that was cut back. And a lot of characters, Lincoln included, their arcs sort of got shortened, and he wasn't happy with that. And he kind of, I'm not sure what came first, if he was let go of the show or if he looked for another job first. Either way, he was cast in American Gods, and his death, I think it was meant to happen by the end of the season, but then because of his casting on American Gods, he was available less, so they had to kill him off sooner, and it kind of was kind of just a mess, and he ended up being killed off two episodes after Lexa, which was awful, and then, so that was bad, and the way he died, the way that they chose to kill him off, I think is kind of inexcusable. But that's kind of two separate points, but kind of the same point. But yeah, so again, they kind of, it was kind of a mess with those two deaths coming right on top of each other, both because of actor disputes of one kind of another. They're called controversies for a reason, guys. So let's hear your thoughts on it, because I've already shared mine elsewhere.
I don't know how I feel about this.
I don't feel good about... Look, I'm just going to restate, I think, what I've said before about Lincoln, which is, like, I feel like the show didn't particularly know what to do with him. I feel like he was treated not that well by the show, the character, and I think that there is an added layer, like, an added complication of that because of race and the show's depiction of race, which, like, I've talked about at length on these episodes, so I'm, like, not going to get into it again, but... Like, needless to say, I was not a big fan of how this went down. I was certainly not a fan of how he died. Although, if I can move from Lincoln for a second, I have to say the show, again, in not really knowing what to do with him, the show itself never particularly sold me on Lincoln and Octavia, but I think the actors really did. The actors really sold me on it. And I'm super curious to know, like, kind of what the initial plan was for him if Lexa hadn't been such a hit. But, like, the irony of this was, like, I mean, they basically locked him up at the camp because they didn't know what to do with him, right? So, like, his frustration of being like, I want to go out and do things was like, yeah, but we don't know what, so you just have to stay here. Yeah. It was a little too real. I really like Lincoln as a character when we actually got to see, you know, who he was as a character. But I just think this was a big mess. Like, this was a real big mess. And I kind of don't really have that much more to say on it. I think it's a shame that the death was only two episodes later. So I hope that, like, reactions to Lincoln's death were not just, oh, and now you're killing more people because people are still mad about Lexa, because I think this is bad for a whole different set of reasons to why Lexa's death was bad. And it's just the timing was unfortunate. But yeah, they obviously didn't have anything to do with him, and it sucks if the actor was feeling that way too. I don't know any of that part of it, but it was not a good season for Lincoln, and I was like waiting for this to happen. And when it did happen, it was like horrifying. It was really horrible and really, really hard to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's basically it. It's kind of a mess.
Right. Right, right. And just to your point quickly about Lincoln and Octavia, I think what it is that they never, and again, this is easy for me to say because I wasn't there, but I don't think they ever really thought it through. Like they always said, you know, Lincoln and Octavia are the Romeo and Juliet of the Hundred, you know, from different opposing people, and they want to be together despite all the odds. Right, exactly. Like in the end of season one, they wanted to go off to Luna's clan, which we later learned Octavia would never have been happy there. That made no sense. And I think once in the beginning of season three, when we saw that time jump and Octavia was a grounder and Lincoln was a sky person, they had basically swapped places. That was it. Like, that was the end of that.
Yeah, and that made no sense either.
They reached their full potential. Well, I think that did. But I think it showed that, like, why they were attracted to each other was actually they were on their way past each other. Like, they weren't on their way from separate points to the middle. They were on their way to each other's people. Like,
Octavia, that's an interesting reading.
Loved. Right, like, Octavia, for her, the grounder lifestyle is where she has found who she is. Like, she, and that's, again, you saw in season two, I think the writers realized that too. Like, someone like Indra, who is so, like, such a grounder. Like, you know, like, she is so, such a warrior and such a, so committed to that part of the grounded life, like the warrior life, where Lincoln is not a warrior. Like, that's not what he wants. He doesn't want to fight. But Octavia does. That's what Octavia is drawn to. And I think they realize that that relationship and dynamic between Indra and Octavia allowed Octavia to pursue what her passion and what she truly wanted. And in a way, what she had with Lincoln, it drew her back to the middle place where she didn't really want to be. And for Lincoln, it was the same. He didn't really want to be in that middle. He wanted to be, yeah. So anyway, so once they had split, like changed places, there was no real way that the narrative could get them back to the same place. So I think once that was done, it was done. And they obviously had Octavia on this whole new different path. And they didn't find a new path for Lincoln. And I think that's a shame. I think there's a lot they could have done with Lincoln. And then everything with Ricky Whittle happened. And they knew they had to kill him off. And so that was kind of a moot point. But like you, I would have been interested to see what their actual plan for him was, if they had been able to think of one. Because I think that's, yeah, the Octavia Lincoln thing was short-sighted and it was never going to make sense for them long-term because of who they were and because of what they wanted.
That's I really like that reading of them, actually. I think I agree with that. I hadn't thought about it like that before. But I do have to say, the actress who plays Octavia, her acting in the latter half of the season after Lincoln's death was phenomenal. And if I wasn't sold on the relationship before then, I certainly was based on her response and sort of the very real effect that had on her. And I think because we've seen Octavia be this strong character, it was really important, and I was like grateful to the show for giving her like grieving time and seeing how kind of, you know, emotional and vulnerable all of that made her, because it would be like completely ridiculous if she had just been, okay, well, like I'm angry and like, I'm going to whatever about this. Like, she becomes sort of irrational and unstable. And yes. I was definitely sold on their relationship after that, based on that. And, you know, I mean, they have great chemistry, those actors, but I'm glad Ricky Whittle is like doing American Gods and it's getting really good reviews. Yes. And like, obviously he's found a place where he's like, where he's happy to work. So that's good, at least.
And also, thanks for explaining your theory, because I feel like the idea of star-crossed lovers, like, it makes more sense now.
Yeah.
Just because of their own trajectories. And like,
they literally crossed and then moved on.
Right. If Octavia is destined to be a fighter, then Lincoln's death is only going to fuel that trajectory for her. But it is too bad that as an actor, Ricky Whittle was finding not as much satisfaction as he should have in the role.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think it's not like inherently bad. I mean, it's kind of it's an interesting problem the show faced, that they found in a way the relationship between Octavia and Indra was more compelling than the romantic relationship between Octavia and Lincoln, because like there's just more happening in that relationship, right? There are more layers to it, because like you said, once they got together, it was kind of like, and then what? But Octavia and Indra have been so fascinating to watch over last season and this season, and I love Indra and I love their relationship and that sort of mentoring, and even after, teacher thing. It's fascinating.
Even when they reunite after Lincoln's death too, it's like Indra still has so much to teach Octavia.
Oh yeah.
And that's one of my favorite moments. That scene is one of my favorite. Yeah, me too. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Sorry, I just saw what was next.
But another sort of Yeah. Oh, God. But no, just to finish that, and then I just briefly wanted to actually touch on this because it makes more sense. But yeah, it is tough to say, like, you know, Lincoln basically, like, they sort of, Lincoln and Octavia, they fueled each other's arcs, but Lincoln's death sort of fueled Octavia's arc. It's tough to say, but because I wish it hadn't been that way, but it's still, like, as you guys said, like, the dynamics that Octavia has with Indra and with the Grounders and with Bellamy, like what Lincoln's death does to Octavia and Bellamy is huge, you know. And it's not, and this is actually another controversy that is sort of a little bit more interesting, is that, you know, people felt really sort of uncomfortable by the way that Octavia treated Bellamy after Lincoln's death, beating him up in that
cave.
Seriously,
why?
And Well, because I think that there's this feeling that the narrative sort of glorifies Octavia's violence towards Bellamy, which I disagree with. I don't think there's any glorification of her in that moment. Like, I think the entire point of Octavia's story and what makes it so interesting is that she is definitely on a dark path. Like, there's nothing quote unquote good about how she behaves after Lincoln, but it also makes total sense for her character. And it makes sense for the way that Bellamy takes on the guilt for that. Everything about that moment sort of feels like it's a key moment in their really messed up dynamic. And I think Octavia, you know, based on what she does in the season finale too, by killing Pike, I think that it's we're very clearly meant to take away that Lincoln's death has broken her. You know, that it isn't rising her up to this awesome badass place, but it's really sort of tearing her down. And I think that moment really did a lot to show that. Yeah. I just wanted to address it because I know it's a big thing.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't even bump on it. Like, I mean, do people not feel like Octavia is at least partly justified in, I mean, she's certainly justified in like being angry at Bellamy, in like having rage towards Bellamy, and Bellamy should have some guilt because Bellamy is partly responsible. So I don't think the actual scene between them was glorifying violence. I thought it was really brutal. It was like, it was hard to watch for that reason, but I don't think it was like, yeah, glorifying it or didn't make sense or anything like that. I thought, yeah, like you said, it kind of seemed like a turning point between them. And honestly, I didn't blame Octavia for her behavior towards Bellamy and following that and even like across the season, because she has chosen to be a Grounder and she, you know, considers these people to be like her family now, and Bellamy just massacred like hundreds of them. So of course she's mad about it. Like, of course she has those feelings towards him. I mean, it would be completely ridiculous if she didn't.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the last big upset of the season.
No.
The one that I think broke, you know, like I wrote in the doc, the way to kick us when we're down. After losing Lincoln and Lexa, the show felt fit to kill off the last light in our lives, which was obviously Sinclair, who had to pay the price.
My unproblematic fave, literally.
I know.
He was like, so perfect. Literally,
the episode before he died, Nevermore, which, spoiler alert, is my favorite, when he's working with the delinquents, I remember just like, this is everything I've ever wanted. And then
yeah, that was really
and
rough.
I will, like, I have to say, like, in I'm watching season four now. There's an episode in season four where I was thinking, oh, that's why Sinclair died. But like all the way up until very recently, I just thought that was gratuitous and dumb. But now I actually feel like I understand it. But at the time when it happened, I was so pissed off. I was just, I hate death for no reason, you know?
Yeah, I also feel the same, but at the same time, I feel like the 100 was trying to go to some lengths to be like, no one is safe and like people just die and like it's a dangerous place. And I agree, but I can understand it, if that makes sense. I mean, Sinclair is literally, I think, my favorite character on this show. I love him so much. I mean, loving him since the start. And they gave us so many great Sinclair Raven scenes in this, and I love their dynamic so much. I think it was one of my favorites that I called out last season, and like, oh yeah. it really killed me. And the scene where he actually dies and he's yelling at Raven like stay in the rover, and he's trying to protect her even in that last moment, like my heart was just, I was just broken. That was the moment that broke me this season for sure.
That was almost too much, honestly. Because obviously, yeah, like they're just their coworkers, but in that moment, it was very like almost like a parental moment where he's just staying the rover, and it was heart clenching for sure. And just the look on her face too when she realizes that there's nothing she can do, like she cannot save him.
Yeah,
it's just awful.
Yeah, I hate Emerson so much. He's such an annoying bad guy. Like that was a great episode. That was a great episode. But Emerson is so that like, he's just that like evil laugh type bad guy. I mean, all those mountain men guys were, and they were so annoying, but like, I was like, oh, Emerson, like just, like it's not, not even vaguely, I can't even vaguely understand you. Like there's no gray here. Like you're just this like bad guy, capital letters. And like,
well, even his whole master plan, like Sinclair, he planned it out. He was like, I'm going to make Clark watch everyone die and then I'll kill her slowly. It was very, very quintessential bad man.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Right. I agree. Okay, so let's quickly turn to which we're already kind of in the latter half of the season, which I think for a lot of people, there's a big distinction between 3A and 3B. 3A was kind of like the Lexus part of the season, and 3B was when all of the characters came back together. And I think one of the things we saw that was so gratifying that I didn't even realize when it was going on, but I definitely realized it on rewatch, is that the first half of the season, Clark is just so removed from everyone. Like, except for Octavia, who sort of flitters in and out of the Polis story, she doesn't really interact with any of the people that we love for more than like a second. And it's frustrating to watch, honestly, like especially because she's already been separated from them for like 3 months by the time the season begins. So having a show where your lead is like physically separated from everyone else, I think kind of made it for a disconnect that I did not appreciate. So when they finally get back together and they're all working together, you know, Clark and Bellamy and Monty and Raven, and well, they're all working to save Raven, it's pretty much just like, it feels like breathing again after a long time, holding your breath. Like that's the show I love. And in a way, I think they earned it by keeping them separate for so long. On the other hand, I never want them to separate them ever again, because that's my show, is when the delinquents are together, plus Sinclair, Rip Sinclair. But and then them coming together to save Raven and having that story with Raven and Lindsay Morgan just being phenomenal as Allie and as herself trying to push Allie out of her brain just made for, I think, that was the best part of the season for me. It was those couple of episodes. And I don't know what you guys thought, but for me, it felt like such a relief.
Yeah, I guess them coming back together was fine. I mean, that meant that Jasper was around more, and I literally want to murder Jasper every time he's on screen. And let me just say this right now, like Jasper, no, I hate Jasper so much. Jasper's like the only time I was like, oh, Allie is like the worst, except there's one point where she's like, oh, like where Raven is Allie. And she's trying to get inside all their heads, and she's talking to Jasper, and she's like, oh, everyone has to feel bad for Jasper because Jasper lost someone. Like, wake up, Jasper. Everyone's lost someone. I was like, yes, team Allie, like 100%. You know, Jasper's fall off the rails from from what happened with Maya was like, just again, did not feel super earned to me. And also I just hate Jasper with every part of my body. Okay, so
I do have to make a rebuttal to this.
And I like him with Monty. No, you don't even like him with Monty?
Oh, no, I'm like, Monty, get away from him. You deserve better. Like, go hang out with literally anyone else. Okay. Yeah. Go hang out with Harper. I love Monty, but like, I hate Jasper so much. I will not back down.
No, it's fine. That's fine. But I do think what is so important, honestly, about Jasper and about the story they're telling with Jasper, I think, personally, is that I think, like, he... what they're doing with Jasper is he's the character that like Finn cracked under the pressure. You know, I think it's important when you have
when you have
shows like The 100 where, like, by design all of the characters have to be like iron skinned and just able to keeping calm and carrying on through heaps of crap that they have to go through and losses and physical traumas and terror and pain. They just have to trudge along because otherwise they would have no show. I think I really appreciate that there's a character like Jasper who legitimately cracks. Like, you already see it in Mount Weather. I think there's an amazing moment in season two when they're trying to hold the fort and they're being attacked by the mountain men. And one of the delinquents, I think it's Fox, that she gets taken away and he had promised to protect her. And there's one of the mountain men is still alive and he just loses it. And he just slams this mountain man. He just violently, brutally kills him. And I think that's the moment, even before Maya's death, when Jasper just broke, like he had had enough, like his mind was broken. And then he lost Maya and he fell into this depression, like legitimate depression, like suicidal mindset that he cannot get out of. And it is turning him into sometimes an asshole. Like, honest to God, the way he's behaving is terrible. And the way he's treating Clark, it frustrates me as a fan of Clark that he can't just, quote unquote, get it together and see it from her point of view. But I always stop myself when I have those feelings because I'm like, well, he can't. Like, that's his mind. Like, based on what he's gone through, based on who Jasper is, the PTSD that he's experiencing, the overwhelming depression that he is facing right now does that he cannot, he doesn't have the, and I think it's so real. And I think, you know, whenever people, because there are people that generally hate Jasper and that think he's the worst. And I always feel like, well, in real life, I think when people go through huge traumas and they become depressed and they become suicidal, oftentimes they alienate people around them. Like, they legitimately behave like Jasper's behaving because they want people to hate them. And for me, that's what the story they're telling with Jasper. And that's what, to me, makes it so powerful, is that they're allowing a character to behave like Jasper's behaving and to elicit those responses and to alienate everyone, including the audience. That's totally fine. But I think it's important. And I think the response that I get from it, the way that it makes me think about these types of how people are behaving and the way the mind works, like, I, for me, it has value. Jasper has a lot of value. So I just kind of wanted to put that out there as a counter to your dismissal of him.
Nope. Mm-mm. No, Jasper has white boy pain over a girl that he knew for like 5 seconds. Jasper's only responses to anything are only when like girls are involved. So I have zero time for Jasper. But I do really love Monty in this season.
Can we talk about Monty in this season? We can agree on that.
I think his conflict is super interesting with his mom. And I think what he has to do with like having to kill his mother twice. And that was a great twist of like, her having taken the chip.
Oh God.
I think is really, really, is really, really interesting and was really, and see, like, Monty's a character where it makes more sense to me that Monty like went along with what was happening because Monty has always been a kind of follower. And so the combination of like, you know, he kind of follows Bellamy or he like, you know, needs some kind of authority figure in a way that Bellamy or Clark or maybe even Raven don't seem to, but also like being reunited with his parent. And I've said before that the lack of family relations, like relationships that we get to see because of the one child rule and because of all the families being split up and everything, is something I'm constantly wanting more of on this show. And it was so fascinating to see like their dynamic compared to Abby and Clark's dynamic, which is the only other real like mother and daughter relation or like child and mother relationship that we have seen so far. I thought that was great. I mean, I felt so bad for Monty. I love Monty, but yeah, I really liked everything that they did with his character and sort of the decisions that he had to make and the way that played out. Like, no, I'm not certainly not saying free Jasper, like, oh, characters should be, you know, oh, I'm fine with everything. And like, I have no trauma from any of this. Obviously they do. But again, with Jasper, like A, he's annoying and B, like it's not earned. So that's why I don't like it. But with Monty, it felt like it really was. Certainly with Raven, it felt like it really was. I loved Raven, that scene with Raven trying to keep Allie out of her head by like distracting herself with like doing pull-ups and everything was one of my favorite scenes in the entire season. The scene where Raven cuts herself so that Abby will take the chip is probably the worst thing the show has done, I think.
Yeah, it was really rough.
I mean, I know I kind of say that about everything, but like that was really... But the actress, and I just don't know anyone's name, sorry, but the actress who plays Raven was like just absolutely insanely phenomenal this season. And I really like the way they tied all of that in with like her chronic pain issues from her leg. And like the fact that they haven't dropped that, I think is really important. Cause like Raven is this very strong character and, you know, Raven could verge into strong female character territory, capital letters, very easily, but they don't forget like what she has gone through and they don't forget what she is dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And so, you know, it makes sense, all of the stuff that happens with Raven. It's harrowing as hell to watch it. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, she's definitely the MVP of the back half of this. And I was much more invested in like what was happening with Raven than honestly with Clark for most of the season.
Because I think that Clark is also like is very one track minded this season. And specifically after Lexa dies too, she's so focused on trying not to grieve, but like going through the grieving process anyway and trying to figure out the mystery of this chip and all of this stuff. But Raven's storyline is just so much more complex than it has been for so long that she's just automatically so interesting to watch. And the fact that she just gets blow after blow after blow and just keeps getting up is so, so, so empowering to see. And I think that that's why she's consistently one of my favorite characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I liked seeing the recognition on Allie's part that, like, we know that we've always kind of known that Raven is sort of exceptional and has this exceptional mind, but to see that recognized from an outside perspective meant that it was actually a thing the show was setting up. So it wasn't just that it was convenient to have Raven around and that she was so clever because she could solve all the problems. Like, this is an actual thing that they like, we need her, you know, we need her mind to be able to do what we need to do. I think that was validating also for a lot of sort of what they've done with her character across the three seasons.
Agreed. I definitely agree. I think what you said about Monty and Raven is very, very true. And I think Monty is such a prime example of I think what the 100, maybe it's biggest strength, which is character building and never allowing anything to remain unaddressed, like never letting sort of a character, like always being aware of basically what's going through a character's head, and staying true to that with Monty in particular, with letting him and letting him and Jasper, like however you feel about Jasper's trajectory, letting Monty and Jasper just move in completely different directions, give them completely separate relationships, both romantic and otherwise, and let them like stay connected, but without having to remain this inseparable duo just because that's how they were introduced. I really appreciate that. And then you had, you know, with Raven, I just there's nothing I can say that you guys haven't already said. I just basically want to echo everything you said, that she is the Lindsay Morgan and with the actress and Raven, the character, and what they've done with her is definitely a focal point of a lot of the of things that people praise about the show too. Like, she is such a powerful, amazing female character. And in a way, in season three, I think there's a lot to be said that Clark sort of faltered a little bit. You know, my mother and I are watching, or my mother is watching the third season right now, and she kind of had to admit that she loves everyone except Clark at the moment, and I think that's fair based on her development in season three. I definitely think she was isolated, like I've already said, in a way that I feel like I wish she wouldn't have been. But Raven for sure, Monty, Octavia, they stand out. Their journeys this season stand out. And I feel like Kane as well, to a slightly lesser degree, but definitely he's, what he goes through too is very affecting. So that was amazing and a great little positivity injection here. Let's talk about, there's a few of the other stories. Like, we kind of already talked about Jasper, and I feel like, you know, by the end of the season, that's the one thing I did want to add about him, was that actually the original season three finale punch was going to be that Jasper was actually going to kill himself. So that was supposed to be the conclusion of his arc, that he had just failed to pull himself out of the downward spiral that he was in and that he was going to die. But what season three was actually able to do was they didn't film the finale, I think, until part of the season had aired. So they actually had the finale left to film and they took it out because they were like, it's too much. Like, we can't do this. Like, we'll lose our audience. So Jasper was the reprieve. I'm sure Merrima is very thrilled about this. Oh, God. But it was too dark. Like, they couldn't do it. So they, like, kept him alive.
I mean, I don't want to see anyone, like, commit suicide on this show, but I would be happy to see Jasper no longer on the show. That is for sure.
But, yeah, so anyway, he's definitely not cured or okay by any means, but he's not dead. And that was also, they had some additional, I think, stuff with Lexa and the City of Light and her telling Clark that she loved her. And I think that was kind of added in as a little attempt. I don't even know why, but you know, just to have that in there. So they don't have that this season. So what's done is done. And then I think let's talk a little bit about Murphy, because we haven't really talked about him a lot. I think Murphy is another character for me, like Monty, that his development through the seasons has been pretty phenomenal for me. I love seeing him develop. I love him, like, going back to season one and just seeing how far he's come and seeing how true he still is to what he used to be. But just the compassion that he's sort of allowing himself to show, and how much he wants to be one of the delinquents, and he always has been, and he just doesn't know how. And when he finds himself in Polis, and first of all, when Clark calls him friend, that's like one of my favorite moments of the show. And then when he decides to stay and help her and gets trapped in the whole Antari mess and basically also is coerced into having sex with her, and how terrible that is and how dark that is, and how that, what that does to his character and everything with Amori. I think there's so much depth to Murphy, and that actor does such a brilliant job with it. And yeah, I don't know what you guys' thoughts on Murphy is at this point, but he's definitely one of my favorites.
He's not the worst anymore.
Well, I think... No. Just before you say, Pam, I just think it's really important to say, like, he's not coerced into having sex. Like, she rapes him.
Right.
Like, that is...
Yes, yeah, I do clarify that as that elsewhere. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's definitely true. That is a rape storyline that they handle sort of in a really sort of...
Yeah.
And through Murphy too, which is just such an interesting character to choose from that arc. And I think, you know, just based on what kind of consequences we might see that have for him, I'm definitely hoping for that to get picked up somehow in season four in a way that because for a character like Murphy, it's something that he compartmentalizes really to a scary degree, like everything else bad that has happened to him. Yeah, go on, sorry.
Does the show know that it was rape? Like, obviously, I haven't seen season four. Do they know that? Okay, good. yeah, that was my only concern with that.
Right, that it was played not a little 100% bit sure to be based sexy, on, right? It was basically the music. Like, that really threw me off.
Well, also because he says the things I do to stay alive, but in his Murphy way, which is so, like, kind of, like, sarcastic but joking, but... Which is, I think, it makes the whole group even more uncomfortable.
You can see it on his face, though. Like,
yeah.
But I think that's it, that they leave, and that it's so important that the actors convey, you know, like, to the minute, because that, everything in his, like, I wrote a whole article about it, basically, that how it's all in his expression, you know, it's all in the pauses, it's all in the, like... Music aside, that scene was incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah, the music was what... Yeah. The music was the thing that made me be like, oh, does the show know what it's doing with this? But yeah, I mean, Murphy, I really like Murphy, turns out. Like, he's one of my favorite characters from this season. I'm not so into Amori, but like, that's fine, whatever. I think he's really interesting though. And I think he had a really fascinating arc, and that rape storyline, I mean, it tied into a lot of what this season was doing about sort of body autonomy, with Raven, with the chip, with Allie. Like, I want to talk about it with Luna, maybe, if we get a second, but yeah, I think that was all, I mean, I'm glad to know it was intentional on, for that part, but yeah, that was all very, very related. And Murphy is, Paul Murphy had to spend so much time with Jaha, who is the literal worst, turns out. He has always been the worst. We see that in flashbacks. Jaha is a similar character who I'm like, just go away, please. But yeah, Murphy is great this season. Sorry, Pam, I interrupted you like 10
minutes
ago. That's
okay. I just very quickly, and we don't have to spend more time on this because I know we're running very long, but I just want to say from like a personal viewing standpoint that seeing that flashback, even though it was really Pike's flashback where he was teaching all of the kids earth skills and stuff like that, it really made me understand Murphy's characterization a lot more, especially after he does get on the ground, because like the one thing he takes from all of those lessons is that you have to survive, you have to learn to survive, and like that's his thing, like that's what keeps him going. And of course in season three with Amori, like you kind of see him open up his mind and his heart to this idea of caring for other people, which is very nice. But at the end of the day, like survival is his main, it's the thing that sets him into motion. And it was really interesting to see where all of that comes from. Like it was like he almost like just to see like where his character, why his character is the way he is and how much of that weighs into his experience up on the arc was really intriguing.
Yeah, that flashback was like such a perfect example of how effective the 100 can be, because it showed us all of that with Murphy. It showed us a lot of what was happening with Pike. It showed Octavia really like flourishing at earth skills, which I thought was so interesting. It showed us Jaha like refusing to send Pike down. I mean, all of these things, we got so much out of those like couple flashbacks that we got from that little group of them. And I think you're so right about the Murphy stuff, but it was so effective for the other characters too. So a well-placed flashback can do wonders.
Agreed.
Just saying.
So let's, Luna, I know you wanted to talk on her. So let's talk briefly about her too.
Oh, I love her. I love Luna. I hate Clark in this whole thing. I mean, I found Clark frustrating this season. I always like Clark, but I have always found her frustrating. And I think that's fine. But I found her particularly frustrating in this. Again, like just going back to that idea of like body autonomy, the fact that she was willing to put the chip in Luna made me so uncomfortable. And I was like, Clark, like why? And I know why, like she makes the case for why, but I did not really buy it. But I thought Luna was a really interesting character. We haven't seen a character kind of like her before on this show. And I was really sad about everything that happened sort of around Luna. And, but she was also like the scene where Luna fights was so important, I think, to show like she's chosen to live this sort of peaceful life and take herself away. But A, like this is who could have been Lexa for all intents and purposes. And also that in this world, like even if you choose to be sort of peaceful or whatever, you still have to be able to protect yourself. Like that's the only way that she survived this long. Anyway, I think it was very telling So I wish we had seen more of her. I wanted to shake Clark like sharply by the shoulders, but I thought it was a great little divergent from the rest of the series, as it were.
Yeah. Luna, and also we don't get to see a lot of her, but also Nyla, the character that Clark sleeps with, and then she comes back a little bit later.
The trading post?
Yeah, exactly. Those two characters to me represent something that I just always want more from in the show, which is just this nuanced idea of what grounders are, because the show is telling us that grounders are a lot of different things, but they're only showing us warriors, you know, with very brief exceptions. And so I think getting characters like Luna and Nyla, it first of all, it speaks to the fact that it's not just something they're saying, it's something that is true within the reality of the show, but it also is just something that I wish was more prevalent, because I think it would be easier for us, like, again, we can rationalize it away, but it would be easier for us to be able to say, look, grounders are all these different things, you know? And so I agree. I appreciate Luna. I wish she had been introduced sooner, to be honest with you. And I hope we get more of her, .. You know, that would be nice.
I mean, I'm assuming yes, but please, yes.
Do you have anything to add, Pam?
About Luna? No, she's amazing. Yeah. We haven't seen season 4. Merriman, I have not, but definitely a character that I wouldn't mind seeing pop up again, for sure.
Okay, so I guess, unless you guys have anything else you wanted to point out, I think we should move into our favorites.
No, let's do it.
Okay. Let's see. Favorite characters. Merma, who do you have?
Sure, I'll just list them because I think I've covered them all. Lexa, this season, obviously, for reasons stated above, Lexa, Octavia and Indra, Raven, Luna, and Murphy. Because, surprise, I really like Murphy now.
And Pam, what about you?
Raven and Lexa.
Okay. And I kind of went the Merrima way and just almost listed everyone. So Raven.
Well, you did it first.
Yeah, I tried to consolidate because time. So you're welcome.
Right.
Yeah, Pam is the better person.
Taking the hint, yeah. Raven, my number one. Lexa, Kane. We didn't really talk about Kane, but I love Kane. I think Kane is so great this season, like trying to hold the shit show together and just failing utterly, but doing the best he can. That moment, I'm sorry, I'm already breaking the rules of shortness, but that moment when Kane goes to Polis and he sees the grounders and he's just so excited. And, you know, Abby has that moment when she goes, you know, you're really better suited for this than I am. And the acknowledgement of that and the pin passing, I thought it was so great. I love that. And I think the reason we haven't focused so much on it is because there really isn't any controversy with that. They're just literally just great this whole season.
Agree. Cosign.
And Indra is one of my absolute favorites. I love that she's taking up more time in the story. Murphy. And then I put Bellamy. And I'll just put him because I like him a lot. And I think in the larger terms of a story, I still stand by that his development made sense. We don't need to revisit that, though. Favorite relationship, team-ups, and dynamics, Merrima?
Well, like I said before, all of the Raven and Sinclair moments we get in this, I have loved before, and I guess now I'm feeling quite strongly about it because, you know, Sinclair, my love. But no, I think their relationship was so well done, and we got to see, you know, a bit of it in the flashbacks previously and then more in this season. So, so well done. And then obviously my ship has sailed, guys. I have been talking about this since the start. Cabby is for real. I guess I didn't expect that it was going to, I mean, I think I did. No, I predicted a kiss this season. Yeah. I remember last episode. I was like, they're going to make out, and they totally did. But also they like basically, you know, gave up their souls, like Kane like gave up his soul for Abby also, which is like the romantic. So yeah, we didn't really talk about it, but like I just really, it was really hard to watch a lot of that, but it was so well done. So I'm just really excited, and their like reunion at the end was very emotional. And I love Abby, but I really like Kane. I agree with everything you just said. And so I'm excited to see them be happy, ? In season 4, please. If anyone is ever happy on this show. Yes. Was very excited. I had lots of like capital exclamations on Twitter when I was like, oh my God, there's a kiss. Like, oh my God, so exciting. So yeah. That was a fun time for a cabbie ship.
I'm going to hop on your cabbie ship, if only for that reunion at the end. And I feel like Clark is now team cabbie too, because she's like, Mom, just go to him.
Oh, 100%.
But just go to him. Obviously, yeah. Kane and Abby don't get as much screen time as the younger cast members, but when they're on screen, like even when they're apart, but they're still working together, it's so interesting to see what they're planning and stuff like that. So very good.
Again, for me, I would just say I really appreciated Kalexa for what it was. I was really into it while it was going on. And so I loved them. I loved the delinquents getting back together. The delinquents continue to be my favorite dynamic. Bellamy and Clark meeting up again was really satisfying after they'd been apart. Octavia with Jasper and Murphy at different points, Monty, at different points in the season was really satisfying. Raven Sinclair, and of course, Cabby, my number one ship as well. That's the one thing we can all agree on. Yay! And favorite episodes, Merrima.
Well, I'll start with Join or Die, and then I also picked 13, but so did Pam, so I'll let her talk about that. Join or Die I picked because, for a weird reason, which is I found the music in this episode so good. And I wrote this down like 15 times in my notes for it. Yeah, it was both the score and the soundtrack in this, like the particular songs they chose, and then like the score that accompanied other parts of the episode. But basically this is the episode where Abby is evil and Kane is up on the cross and like she tries to seduce him, and we get the flashback with Pike teaching Earth skills. We get like Indra and Murphy kind of teaming up a little bit, and there was a lot happening in this episode. But I mean, as far as like just the production of the episode itself, it really stood out to me for the music. And so I wanted to give that one a shout out because I thought like it was so, so good. And obviously because there was a lot of like cabbie stuff in it, but mostly because of the music. And then, yeah, I chose 13 also because we've kind of talked about it, but it was sort of the Lexa aside, it was sort of the episode where everything came together for me. And I really felt like the show knew where it was going and what it was doing. And we got a whole bunch of the space stuff, and I miss the space stuff, which is probably why I really like the flashbacks. But I'll let Pam talk about it.
Yeah, I picked 13 not because of Lexa dying, because of course we've already talked about how tragic that was, but just the flashbacks in this episode were incredibly interesting and added so much context into the entire series that it just really stood out as one of the strongest episodes.
And I have three. I think that after everything's said and done, honestly, I feel like this season has a lot of strengths as well as weaknesses. And maybe we've been pretty balanced in the show and given it the credit it deserves and the criticism it deserves. But I do think it had a lot of strong episodes and some that really stood out to me. First of all, Juanita Part 1. First of all, I'm a sucker for a time jump. I think that was really fun to see them after a bit of time had passed, the joy ride, and just seeing Pam, that's not her name, Clark wrestle a puma and whatever the hell. That was so much fun. I also picked Watch the Thrones, which is the episode where Lexa battles Rowan. I think this was such a cool episode. I loved that battle scene. And I love Rowan. We didn't talk about him at all, but I guess he wasn't in it that much. But he's such a cool character. And and Lexa was so badass in that episode. And then I picked Nevermore, which is my favorite episode of the entire series, which is when they are holding Raven, when the delinquents are all back together and Raven is chained to the bed and she's delivering all of those truth bombs about all the characters. And the acting from Lindsay Morgan especially, and the way that the characters are finally face-to-face with each other and just sharing how they really feel, which is something the show does a lot. Like, it does so well in seasons 1 and 2, and I felt like I was missing that from season 3, and then came this episode and just did it so fantastically. Favorite episode, for sure, that one, Nevermore.
That was really good. I just had one issue with, I mean, I kept thinking, obviously it's like such a minor thing, but every time there was like when they knew that Jasper had taken the chip, and then also earlier with Raven, I was like, guys, just gag them and put a blindfold on them. Like, what do you, you don't have to listen to this. I was like, oh, teenagers, so dumb. Anyway, it's fine. It was a great episode though.
Okay, so favorite moments. Marima, what were some of yours?
Sure. I think I may have actually mentioned both of these already, but Raven, the scene with Raven distracting herself to try and keep Allie out of her head and successfully doing so was like just, I thought, phenomenal acting and also really great, a really great character scene for her. So I love that. And then I love the scene with Octavia and Indra reuniting after Lincoln's death, where Octavia says about Pike, why is he still alive? And Indra says, because the dead can't help us. And I thought that was really powerful and also very telling about their relationship and their sort of perspectives and the places that they were in emotionally. And I just really want to see more of their relationship. I just need to see more of them because they are great.
Yeah, I had a very vague, the flashbacks, because just because the show, I love The 100, but yes. I really appreciate getting more information that allows you to understand why some of these people do what they do or why things are the way they are. So I just really, I feel like even though season 3 had a few problems, it really was the season that brought a lot of the lingering questions that I've had about the show together. And so I really enjoyed that.
Same. And apart from Lex and Rowan's fight, I loved in 13, that episode that is, you know, overshadowed by Lex's death, but which is a really, really good episode. Octavia, Indra is surviving the massacre and is just done. And Octavia sort of becomes the master and Indra becomes a student. And Octavia's like, get smacked down, get back up, or whatever she says. I love that. And they stride out together, like power walk. So cool. And another Octavia moment I love was Monty telling Octavia, you know, Octavia has lost Lincoln at this point. She's the one who's done. And she says she has no people. And he says, you're one of the 100. And I love that because, again, that's my show. Those are my people. And I thought that was such a sweet moment between these two characters who, you know, on a lesser show wouldn't be allowed to have this kind of moment between the two of them that wasn't like including one of the quote unquote like major lead characters. So I thought that was really, really good. And then finally, I love the moment. I think that in the second half of the season, Bellamy and Clark had some really good scenes together and they're, like, they are very fractured, and I think they, especially Bellamy, figures out that he really needs Clark. And when Clark is sort of able to give him what Abby gave her in season 2, when in the finale, when Clark is like, I tried to be the good guy, I tried to save everyone, and I failed. And Abby tells her, maybe there are no good guys. And Clark is able to pass that on to Bellamy and say, yeah, you know, maybe it's not about being a good guy. Maybe it's about doing what you think is right under the circumstances and messing up and doing better. And in a way, I think that speaks for the show too, you know, like in a way the show is an example of someone who tries and fails and tries again and tries to do better. And I think that's really powerful. And I really enjoy that part of that aspect of it. Oh, we already talked a lot about the things we didn't love. So is there anything that you didn't feel like you covered enough, or do you want to just skip that?
I mean, I just wanted to say about this last one I have listed, because we didn't really get to that. The thing that I'm feeling about the show in general at the moment is there's kind of too much reliance on this justification of like, oh, I did it for my people, that the phrase has now lost all meaning to me, basically. And it reminds me of in Arrow when Oliver every 30 seconds is like, I have to save my city. And I'm like, but what does that mean, Oliver? I feel like this is just a thing that you're saying now. And it's like the classic drinking game where you would be in hospital after like 10 minutes. Every single character on the 100, and Selena, I know you're going to rebut this, every single character on the 100 uses this justification to do things. And I haven't really bought it so far, and I felt like it was used to justify even bigger things, aka massacres this season. So we'll talk about this, I guess, when we do our season 4 predictions, but I would just really like them to move away from this because it's getting slightly tedious as a justification and as like a reasoning. And it's not that the stories themselves are not interesting, but like just this reasoning that they're using is not interesting anymore. And so I would really like them to move away. Like, they've done three seasons of that. If I have to watch another one, then I may have a problem continuing with the show.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, and that sort of leads nicely into our predictions. And I think what I will say is the show is definitely very aware that its characters are acting. Like, it's kind of one of the points of the show is that its characters are acting out of partly informed biased perspectives, right? Like, it's kind of the whole point that they're all sort of coming at it from with their own, like, they're saying they're trying to do what's good for everybody, but quote unquote everybody is whoever they define as their people. And yeah, there's a line in the episode that's airing tomorrow that I've specifically pointed out in the review that I'm writing for calling the show out for this very thing, like within the show. It's very funny. Anyway, we'll talk about that when you guys are caught up. It's funny you brought it up now because I was literally just thinking about it. Predictions. What do we think is going to happen? What do you guys think is going to happen?
Pam, you go first.
I need to remember
what happened.
I have no idea. I just, you know, the thing is that this would be so much easier if they had left it on a more cliffhangery note. We kind of know that the
world... I feel like
world,
it's a huge cliffhanger.
It's not... I feel like it wasn't, like... It didn't really make me feel like I needed to go watch, like, the premiere now. Is that weird? Maybe that's just me.
That's sad.
I know. I mean, like, I'm still going to watch it, but I feel like I can go watch The Walking Dead first. That's all. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. I don't know. I mean, like, now that we know that the world is basically destined to... Well, like, everybody's doomed, I guess they're going to... try and figure out how to stop that. I don't know. This one's hard to make predictions for.
Yeah, it is. It kind of felt like a little bit like a reset. And so I'm really interested to see what happens because everything up to this point has been about them, like, just trying to survive on the ground. And now it feels like they have to deal with bigger things. Like, it's not just about, oh, we can just, like, kill other people and we'll be fine because, like, apparently the whole world is going to explode or whatever. This isn't a prediction so much as a hope. Like, it would be really interesting to me if this new challenge forced them to work together and we finally got over a bit of this, like, grounder versus the 100 dichotomy that we've been dealing with for three seasons. Because, like I said, I'm getting a bit over it. And I think the show can do more interesting things. I don't think that's the most interesting thing the show has to say, and I would be sad if they thought it was and they, like, really dug into that. So maybe in season four we'll get to see, like,
Rowan is the actor Zach McGowan is the season regular in season four.
Okay, yeah, so Rowan, maybe we'll get to see, I guess we're going to see more of the Ice Nation or as they exist anymore. We'll see maybe some alliances between, like, Rowan and Clark, and maybe Luna comes back. I guess they have to go and warn everyone now, right? Like, if they know that this is what's going to happen. Or maybe they don't. I don't know. Oh my God, maybe they go back to space. That would be amazing. I want space. Oh, that'd be so good. This is like when I had that theory while I was watching season one. Season one, when I was like, they're like, oh, we have to get off the spaceship, like, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I mean, you're on a spaceship, literally fly to the ground. And then they were like, we're on a spaceship. What if we fly to the ground? I was like, oh my God. So maybe now they have to go back to space. That would be awesome. That would be such a fun flip, but I mean, probably not. I don't know. I guess I don't think that all of the Allie stuff was totally resolved. So I feel like we'll get to see, maybe there are some questions from that they still need to kind of answer. And there's definitely a lot of fallout from that I hope we get to see. I'm assuming I don't think there's going to be any time jump like there was at the top of season three, because I think they need to basically, like, immediately jump into it. I think Cabbie are going to be, like, totes a fish. So that will be cute. They'll be, like, Facebook a fish. Yeah, it's a really hard one to predict because to my mind, I mean, I guess this is kind of what Pam means. Like, it wasn't a cliffhanger in the way that there's sort of been before, where you're like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? It's kind of like, oh, everyone's going to die, I guess. So it's hard,
like,
to predict,
like, left in a state
direction
of motion, you know, like with the end of season one, like, Clark is in this foreign place. So she's put into motion, and kind of the same thing happens at the end of season two. So season three, I think, like, also it's, for me, I'm just more interested in, not really a prediction, but just to see kind of how some of the events of season two affect, like, the characters personally. So, like, if Monty's going to struggle with having to kill his mother, not once, but essentially twice. Or, like, we see Kane completely break down when he comes off of Allie's influence. So is, like, that going to have any ramifications going forward? Things like that, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, I guess I'm very interested, and again, this is not a prediction, I'm just very interested to see where they're going with Octavia in this season, because she was left in such a raw emotional place, and I hope that she is still going to be with Indra. Like, I hope Indra is still going to sort of be looking out for Octavia, but I don't know, maybe Octavia needs to go and, like, hang out with Luna for a bit or something, and, like, find her inner chill, because... Right. Like, being a grounder seems like it's causing stress for her, even though it's, like, it made sense that she wanted to be a grounder initially, right? Because she spent her whole life trapped and she wanted to be free, and the grounders kind of gave her that freedom, but it hasn't put her in an incredibly great, like, stable place mentally. So I'm curious to see if maybe she needs to make changes, or if Indra maybe would be less inclined to sort of mentor her, or I don't know. All of that is, Octavia is a character I'm very interested to see what happens with. I mean,
yeah.
I don't want to see Clark be like, oh, did we do the right thing or not? Like, I don't know, now the world's going to end. Like, that would be boring. So hopefully we don't get to see a lot of that. And I would like to see Bellamy grappling with some of the decisions that he made in season three, because one thing I do think about Bellamy is he sometimes gets off a little too easily. Like, everyone, even in this, Clark was like, you didn't know that he was going to kill Lincoln, like, to Bellamy about Pike. And it's like, I mean, since when does intent negate impact? Like, it doesn't matter. It's what actually happened. So we saw a little bit of that, I think, in season one. Yeah. In season one, when he was the responsible for the culling up on the Ark from throwing away Raven's radio. Like, we saw a little bit of him dealing with that, but that's different to literally going around and shooting hundreds of grounders. So I think we need to see fallout from Bellamy's actions this season. And maybe Jasper just goes off by himself away somewhere. And that would be cool too. Maybe he could go to that house that, that Murphy and, oh my God, we didn't even talk about Jaha. Wait, is he still alive? Yes.
Yeah.
I hate Jaha. I hope he and Jasper can go away together. The double J's. See you later. They can seclude themselves away. No, I don't know. It's very exciting. I'm very excited to watch it, though. How many episodes in are you now, Selena?
Six.
Okay. So that's fun.
Yeah,
six episodes to watch.
Yeah. Those are some really good predictions and thoughts. And I think, you know, I remember before the season started, I was sort of assuming, and that's not to say anything about what I've seen, but I was sort of assuming that the fact that the entire world was going to end would, like, naturally lead to some, to them having to resort their priorities, you know, and especially yeah. Clark and whoever she chooses to tell about what's happening to the end of the world. Like, suddenly it's about humanity. It's not about your people and my people and their people and our people. I think that's sort of an intentional shift right. that the show has, at least that's my assumption, was that they did that partly to allow the characters to, like, force them to move beyond that, right? But I guess we'll see what happens. I have a prediction.
Yes.
And it kind of pertains to the end of the season, so it's not in no way spoilery, but I actually think that, especially knowing, because I did some interviews with the people involved, and I was like, if season four is the last, are we going to be happy with it? And they were like, no. And that was interesting to me and made me think of, like, how the show is going to, like, how the season's going to end and how it's going to key up season five. And I think that if the world actually does end, like, however they escape it and however many people actually escape it, like, they're not, whether that's, and you said space, like, whether it's a bunker or if it's space or, like, the ocean or wherever they go, like, they're going to have to stay there for a while, right? Like,
oh, you think there's a time jump?
I think there's a time jump. And I think it's, like, a significant time jump.
How long?
Well, at least a couple of years. And I'm thinking, like, you know, both Lost and Battlestar Galactica, the shows that The 100 draws on the most, they both did a time jump for a couple of years. So it makes sense The 100 would do it. The actors are so much older than they're supposed to be playing. And I think the characters are so tired. Like, at this point, you can really feel that all of the things they've been through is weighing on them, and not just for Jasper, but, you know, but for everybody, like, especially Clark. Like, she is so tired and she's lost so many people. And I would kind of love that season four ends with, like, them being secluded somewhere, and that season five doesn't pick up with them being secluded somewhere, or that the catastrophe was somehow miraculously averted, but that we actually jump ahead and we see them having to sort of begin again in season five, having had a little bit of a reprieve.
I like that theory.
Yeah, so that's kind of my working theory right now, and I'm really warming to that. So that's what I'm thinking. And you guys can watch the first six episodes and tell me if you still think that that's very, like, that makes sense, or if it's just dumb.
I like that. That sounds good. Because I also think, I mean, obviously, we know, like, at least Clark, I assume, is, like, going to survive through this, and, like, some other people, because it can't just be Clark running around for all of season five. Like, people are going to survive this. And I guess I had sort of assumed that they would stop it, maybe. But I kind of, yeah, I like the idea that there are things out of their control and they can't, like, avert this crisis, and that it's more about, this season is about finding a way to sort of ride it out. But I also think, like, I don't know, maybe we'll have less, like, major character deaths.
I hope I really hope
because
so.
Because of the backlash to season three. Yeah. But I also think we will definitely, or, like, continue to have lose characters this season, because the show has kind of set itself up like that. And I don't think they can, like, totally back away from it. Like, not completely. But yeah, hopefully less major characters. You know what I would love? I really want Clark to be by herself.
Yeah.
Like, romantically, this season, because, like, we went from Finn to Nyla, is her name?
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
Like, Finn to Nyla, and then to Alexa. Like, that was all going for season two and three, and, like, that was fine, but I would really like Clark to just, like, A, grieve Lexa, mm-hmm. and find some closure about that, and then also just, like, be by herself and, like, be like, I have more important things to worry about than, you know, whether Bellamy's into me or not, which obviously he is.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty obvious at this point, especially with what Raven, as Allie, said to him, but also just in general, the way he was acting this season. I think that's a fact.
Mm. How many episodes are in season four?
I think just 13.
Okay. All right. So we're about halfway through. That's interesting.
Yeah. I'm so excited you guys get to watch it now. Yay.
You can have week-to-week discussions.
Yes. We'll finally be able to talk about it live.
Oh, I can't wait.
After, like, 4 years of you being like, guys, watch this show. It's really good.
I know. And now you guys have.
I'm glad we finally got to do this.
I'm so glad. And, like, even with our discussion,
yeah.
I think it's another, you know, the show, and it's such a precious show to me, and it has so many flaws, and it's still so good, and makes me think so many thoughts, and I'm glad I got to share it with you guys, and I can't wait to talk about season four with you, because so far it's really shaping up to be something special, so I can't wait for you guys to watch it.
Well, I just wanted to say quickly, I really hope people who listen to this, like fans of The 100, don't think, like, Pam and I haven't been enjoying it. But, you know, when you have time to talk about it, obviously you're going to probably dig in on the things that you have more questions about. But it's been so fun to get to watch this show, and I really, really like it.
That's
just
very
to be clear,
true, yeah.
I really
For the
like
record,
it.
We do really, we really love it. You should see our internal chats too, like to Selena, who can't say anything. It's just me and Marima freaking out. But
yeah, and I don't think there's nothing, like, I critiquing a show doesn't mean that you don't enjoy it, and you need to be able to discuss, like, I mean, you don't have to, but, like, I think it's important to be able to discuss the media that you really love also, and, like, the fact that we have been thinking this much about it and, like, talking in this much detail at length about it is because we really care about it.
Yeah.
If we didn't like it, we wouldn't bother. So
exactly.
You know, it's all coming from a place of, like, much love and fascination and, like, surprise and excitement on Pam's and my part, for sure.
Yeah.
And so hopefully, like, people have felt that listening to these specials, because you know, I mean, obviously we don't agree on everything, but that's good too.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, I think that's kind of a good place to sort of wrap it up is that media that really affects you is the one that you're going to have the most strong reactions to, both good and bad. And it's the ones that you're going to crave can do even better because you know it's capable of doing better. And you get disappointed with characters because you feel like they've been so well drawn. So when they're anything less than what you expect, you're like, well, that's not as good as I thought this character was. Like, that's not doesn't make as much sense as I know it can. And I think that's the thing with The 100 is why I will always like stick with it and why I love it so much is because it makes me care so much and it makes me think about story and think about how to make story good. And that's why, you know, like I think a show that makes you care as much as The 100 does is an amazing show. And I don't think criticism negates that in any way.
We're going to get into listener feedback now. You guys had so much to say about The 100 and we loved pouring through all of your amazing and super insightful comments and all of that good stuff. So we're going to get started with some tweets here. The first tweet comes from Laura Morrow, who says, fun The 100 fact, Katie Stewart, the girl with the cool braids in season 2, was the original actress to star in A Wrinkle in Time. Also, okay, episode 8 of The 100 may have literally wrecked me. Not okay, hype ladies. Really not okay.
We have a tweet from Ashley Bonds, who says, on The 100, season 3, episode 7, boo. I guess we can work out to what that is referring.
The next tweet comes from Ceres Station, who says, this was a really fun listen. Season 2 of The 100 was also my favorite so far, and it was great to hear your analysis.
And one from A Capital Chick, who says, during season 3, we see some leaders adrift in 3A, such as Bellamy and Clark, and others trying to step up and learn from past mistakes, such as Kane and Abby. What do you think of these characters' leadership strengths and weaknesses? Any thoughts about their leadership journey so far and where they may be headed? Thanks so much. I think we kind of covered that in our discussion.
We also have a couple of emails to get to. First email comes from Fernanda Torres, who says, hi girls, isn't The 100 wonderful? I gotta say, I disagree with almost 100%, no pun intended, of Marima and Pam's opinions about season 2. And yet, we're all able to love, get excited about, and enjoy the show together. I don't think I can recall another show that generates these passionate and distinct opinions and reactions. It's so fun to be a part of this fandom. Here's how I diverge from you guys. 1. I still don't understand how people can like Bellamy. I've tried hard to like him, but he remains a bore to me even after season 2, and I can't help rolling my eyes and thinking, oh, that guy again, every time he's on screen. 2. I love Jaha. I think the crazier he gets, the better, and I think his season 2 arc was the best among secondary characters. 3. I don't care for Cabby at all. It's so predictable and obvious it gets boring. 4. I only like Octavia when she's with Indra, and I think she's otherwise annoying. 5. I think Lexa is absolutely amazing and by far the most interesting character of the show. I don't have any problems understanding her decisions in the finale from a strategic point of view. She got her people, she knew they would suffer a massacre, she got out, or from a personal point of view. 6. I don't ship Bellamy with anyone. I think if he's left alone, his boredom remains contained within himself, and he doesn't contaminate other characters with it. 7. I can only ship Clark with Lexa or Wells, but I think she's perfectly fine by herself, too. 8. What's up with the Monty love? He's so null. But hey, we agree on a few things. Clark is clean, Jasper is the worst, and Sinclair is pure love. Lots of love, Fernanda.
We have an email from Emmy Foss who says, first of all, these specials are great. I love the discussions, especially the parts I don't agree with. I usually land on the same side as Selena on The 100 issues, so the debate is so interesting. Onto my season 3 thoughts. I have so much trouble separating what happened in the fandom from the show, which, by the way, I'm still super impressed how you dealt with it, Selena. The experiences before and after 307 were so different, and it's hard to separate, but I loved season 3. Watching season 3 is so intertwined with the memories of Lexa loving candles too much, to measuring the length of the tower by using Lexa as a measuring tool, the I did it for my people memes, and then the drama after 307. I can't separate it from start to finish, with the notable exception of Lexa dying. But some points have stuck out for me in season 3. Lindsay Morgan was the clear MVP of this season. She was great as Ally Raven and as regular Raven. Lexa kicking the ambassador out the window is a moment that is just stuck in my head. Lexa swearing fealty to Clark just emotionally crippled me. The commander bows for no one, but Lexa bowed to Clark and I can't even. It's the season I went for a doctor from a doctor mechanic shipper to a ride or die cabbie shipper. Yes. Indra and Kane are the ultimate bro TP. Still a little mad we didn't get the Civil War storyline between the Tree Crew and the Asgata. Watch the Thrones is my favorite The Hundred episode. I wish we'd gotten Lexa and Kostia flashbacks. I also live for the headcanon that Indra was Kostia's mother. Also still bitter over Minty, but Brian is fine. I probably have 100 more points and thoughts about this season, but this email is already too long. So excited to hear your thoughts on this.
We have another email here from Ellie who says, "Hi, Selena, Marima, and Pam. I'm really enjoying your The 100 podcast specials. You're all a bright spot in my week. I think The 100 Season 3 is a lot more disjointed than the other seasons. I also feel there was not enough breathing room for some of the stories, i.e. the Ice Nation, Pike, and Bellamy's plotline. It would have been good to have a couple of episodes from Pike and the Farm Station's perspectives to understand where they were coming from. However, on rewatch, this season feels very eerily prescient of the current state of US and UK politics. At the time, it seemed far-fetched that Pike gained power. Now, post-Brexit and Donald Trump's victory, I think that The 100 warns us against complacency in our politics and the assumption that the liberal point of view is shared by everyone. There were some tone-deaf issues this season, too, especially around Lexa, Lincoln, and Raven's self-harming plotline. I hope The 100 Season 4 doesn't make these mistakes again. However, it still remains one of the best sci-fi shows on TV. It has amazing female characters who are complex and well-rounded. As someone with chronic health issues, it was inspirational to have Raven struggle with chronic pain and disability and still remain strong and brave. As a science graduate, just seeing a female character do science mechanics without worrying that it is for men is amazing. Hopefully a show can inspire girls and young women into science. Really looking forward to the next special. Thanks for your time. Best wishes, Ellie."
And Jen Wright says, "Hello, Selena, Marima, and Pam. After listening to Hype for ages, I'm finally writing in. I started watching The 100 after hearing it mentioned on the show back in the day and have been hooked ever since. As for season 3, I just rewatched it to prepare for season 4. I'm still stuck on why they introduced Gina as a girlfriend for Bellamy, only to kill her off after 3 episodes. Is it supposed to make it more convincing as to why he joined up with Pike? Kinda rude, to be honest. I totally dug Lexa, so I was really turned off by the way that Lexa was killed, especially since it was almost immediately after finally getting together with Clark. I see how it fits into the narrative and that she had to die at some point, but it just seems so out of sync that Titus would just go off like that with a pretty faulty plan and with a gun. Anyway, I am loving the specials. Thanks, Jen."
Our next email comes from Laura, who says, "Hi, ladies. Just finished watching season 3. Boy, do I have some feelings. I wanted to start this off that, largely thanks to previous episodes of Hype, I was totally spoiled by Lexa's death, so I was expecting it, since I knew the fact that their whole relationship was very, very hard for me to become so invested in it, and they had sex and she died. It made me so angry. I have talked with Selena on Twitter, and it really colored even more how I saw Clark and Lexa. If they really wanted me to be invested, I needed more time to grow to love them as a couple. It may be sad because I wanted to like them. Officially, by the end of season 3, I really like Clark and Bellamy, but who knows what character will come in season 4 to shake up their lives and romances. I really wanted to throw the AI out the window and never hear from her again. And Jaha became my least favorite character this season. Some positive things. Harper and Monty became my new favorite couple, and my heart was in my throat during that season finale. Who would have thought that John would also become one of my favorite characters? And I still enjoy Jasper. Sorry, Marima. I wonder if your thoughts have changed, because mine definitely have. That was so long. I can't wait to hear your thoughts so I can start season 4.
And Julia Perkins says, "Hi, Selena, Pam, and Marima. I am one of the, I'm sure, dozens of people writing in about Lexa and the controversy surrounding her death. You are not wrong, Julia." I'll preface this by providing 2 tidbits that likely affected how I felt about Lexa's death. 1, I am a straight woman, so I am privileged to see more people of my sexuality on screen. Two, I ultimately ship Clark and Bellamy, although I'm similar to Selena in that when it comes to the 100, I pretty much ship whatever is on screen. So I loved Alexa and Clark together and cheered them on throughout the beginning of the third season. Lex's death upset me not just because we lost such a strong and complicated character, but because of what she represented for so many viewers, especially in the LGBT community. Still, likely because I am straight and knew little about the kill your gays trope until after Lex's death, I didn't feel the impact of her death in the same way many did. It wasn't until I watched Buffy for the first time this fall and saw a certain death scene that I better understood just how outrageous and offensive this trope is. I can't tell if the way the death is done on Buffy is worse than Lex's, or if it just felt worse because I had already seen something similar happen, just in the opposite order from most people, and had had someone stayed completely spoiler-free on that painful moment in Buffy canon. All the same, it made how Lexa dies even more frustrating to me, because I didn't understand how the showrunners could write the episode like this without realizing how hurtful it would be. That being said, regardless of how Lexa died, it is likely her leaving the show still would have caused enormous backlash. In other words, they could have and should have not killed her by a stray bullet after having sex, but had she gone out in a fierce battle, incidentally how she does in the City of Light in the season 3 finale, people still would have been mad, and that's not completely fair. However much it hurts, Lexa had to die, not just because it sets the rest of the season in motion, but because it makes sense thematically. Lexa's death is foreshadowed throughout the entire third season. We see her training the future Nightbloods, and she constantly says things like, quote, when I die. I believe she even mentions her spirit choosing the next commander in the second season. Killing her off was not something the writers decided to do haphazardly. Her death is set up from the very beginning of at least season 3, if not the introduction of her character. If that is the case, it is messed up that the show would write a lesbian character with the purposeful intention of killing her off. Yet if the writers hadn't made Lexa a lesbian, she would never have been able to represent the LGBT community, nor would we have had her beautiful relationship with Clark. Plus, good representation doesn't mean creating a character that can never be killed. Especially in a show like The 100, it's important to note that no one is safe. That is what makes watching the show so enjoyable. Sorry for the super long email. I hope Pan had fun reading it. Julia. Well, the joke's on you, Julia, because, or on me, I guess, because I totally had to read it. But thank you so much for that email.
And we have one final email from Melissa Miller, who says, hi guys, ever since we were first introduced to the Grounders, I've been curious about how their culture, laws, and language went from modern civilized society to how they are now. 100 years may feel like a long time, but in the grand scheme of things, it's an extremely short period of time for a civilization to forget their history, which seems to be the case. Is that the case? What do they know about the world pre-apocalypse? Even if all records were lost, there were only a few generations of people in that time frame to orally pass down history, something I would think they'd have taken seriously. I understand that extreme situations change people, but how do we get to the how did we go from the guys in the hazmat suits in fully modernized America who Becca met after landing the dropship to blood must have blood and the worship of God who came down from the sky to save people? Also, why did they develop a new language when they all spoke English? And since they did, why did they still speak fluent English? I'd love to get some flashbacks to see how they survived the day the bombs dropped and to what happened in the following years. I also still don't quite grasp what the flame / alley 2 gives the person it attaches to. I understand that it gives them the ability to take down alley 1, but wasn't it also implied that it imparts some kind of wisdom, either on how not to repeat the mistakes of the past or how to make the world a better place or something like that? Because if so, you'd never know it upon seeing how the Grounders rule. Lexa was becoming a very forward-thinking leader, but it sounded like her predecessors were not, suggesting that it wasn't the flame that gave her an edge, but rather her intelligence and personality. I'll be curious to see if having had the flame for a short time changes Clark in some way. Thanks for the great commentary. Your podcasts always brighten my day.
So thank you so much for listening. Sorry that this was so long, but hopefully you enjoyed this podcast. Thank you to everyone who wrote in and shared your thoughts on The 100 Season 3. Pam and Marima are going to watch The 100 Season 4 now. This is going to be so much fun.
Yes.
And we hope that you will listen to the regular Hype show as well, where my voice does not sound like this. And you'll check out our coverage on hypeable.com, where we talk about The 100 and lots of other cool stuff.
And check out our Patreon. Patreon.com/hypepodcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for the plug. I always forget. So thank you so much for listening. My name is Selena.
My name is Pamela.
And I'm Arama.
Bye, guys.
To make my system flow. Welcome to the new age. To the new age. Welcome to the new age. To the new age. I'm radioactive, radioactive. I'm radioactive, radioactive.